Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, one and all. It is the 12th day of February, 2010. It is a Friday. It's Abe Lincoln's birthday. Happy birthday, Abe. And it is a, among other things, it is a frozen Friday on the front porch. Now, if you were to say, for instance, have a frozen Friday on the front porch and it wasn't the... You know, it wasn't the 12th day of February. Maybe say it was, the 20th of July or something like that. A frozen Friday on the front porch wouldn't be such a bad idea, because it would mean that, the long necks were deep in the ice and, somebody had a blender out and a little of this going on. Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice, but not so much. It's a frozen Friday on the front porch in the middle of February, and I do mean frozen, and I do mean February. So we'll just kind of have to deal with it with hot toddies, I suppose. Me, I'm having a hot cup of decaf. Stop it. Don't even. But I'm having a hot cup of decaf from Bob Alexander's SuperBeans.com. I mentioned the other night that I was gonna order some, and I felt like I would be a hypocrite if I didn't. And I did. And you know what? It's so good. It's decaf that tastes like coffee. And you really just can't get around the importance of that when you're a coffee lover who can't have caffeine. Thanks, Bob. Man, did he ship fast. Great stuff. Great stuff. I'll be happy until these couple of pounds go away. And then it'll be back to melted brown crayon and hot water again. That or walking into the loathsome Walmart, which I absolutely despise to do. But at any rate, it is a frozen Friday on the front porch, and we will see where that takes us. You know how it is. We try to just get downright neighborly on front porch Friday around here. Of course, you're always welcome to bring whatever topic you want to the table, but on Frozen Friday on the front porch, we can be a little more laid back, a little less serious, have a little more fun maybe along the way. But there will also be plenty of opportunities for, outrage. And let's go ahead and get started with for folks new to the program, write this down. How to get in touch with the program. Okay? Toll free, it's 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N. If you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan and would like to save us a nickel or a buck, and the success and the growth of the program is being shown up in our monthly bill now, because it goes up and down on any given, based on the number of calls we're receiving on the toll-free line. I was just talking to Boss Man Wayne the other day, and he told me that it's rising on the toll-free, so that's great. Now all we got to do is be able to pay for it. But if you need to use the toll-free line, please do. If you don't, use the direct dial number, 304-658-3333. That's easy, right? 304-658-3333. And, of course, you can always email the program at Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Easy, 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 right? And proud to have a new chatter in the chat room as of last night. The fellow had some issues and managed to get him into the chat room, so I hope we'll see him later in the evening. If you haven't been to the headonradionetwork.com chat room, then by all means, avail yourself of it. It is free and it is fun. And there's a great group in there. The room is filling up just now. I'm sure it'll be chock-a-block soon. Wow, Australia checking in. Phase 5 just entered the room. Let's see. We've got Arkansas, Oregon, Australia, Texas, Ohio, and one more, and I'm not sure where MM is from, and that's my bad because it's not just burned with a hot wire into my brain yet. I'm sure I'll find out in a minute, though. Try the chat room on for size. It is a real blast. So, you know, kick back. It's Friday on the front porch. We've got some of those radiant solar-powered heaters here on the front porch. The batteries are fully charged and blasting out warmth and welcoming conviviality to keep everybody warm in from the snow. You know, we like a hot toddy this time of year, but, you know, you might, I don't know, maybe somebody will fire up the blender. Okay, MM. Great. You're in Tennessee. Now it makes sense. So Tennessee is in the house. Nice little scattering of human beings there. And, of course, to everyone not in the chat room or listening by podcast, which I think we just about got a representative in every single state and a number of countries outside the continental United States. And it's really hello to everybody listening via podcast, listening perhaps tonight after the Malloy show goes off and this starts up as a rerun. I love the community that we've built here, and that you have remarked upon frequently really moving words. Over at the BuzzFlash piece. You'll forgive me for being a little bit stoked about the BuzzFlash piece. It's the biggest piece of PR that the Horn has ever gotten. And if you haven't, go on over and comment on it. Feel free. You know, just showing people what the Horn means to them. It is at buzzflash.com/interviews/168. buzzflash.com/interviews/168. All right, I guess all the preliminaries are out of the way. Do I have any PSAs to read? Let's see. There will be a snake handling at the First Baptist Seminary and Herpetological. No PSAs. That's one of the things about terrestrial radio. Although, you know what? If you've got announcements or stuff that you want to get out that you think would be of interest to a global audience, then do please feel free to jump in. And there's our buddy from last night, the Jaffe, the Hafe, I'm not sure. Illinois is in the house. This is great. So we've got 2 hours and 52 minutes of cussing and discussing to do. And, you know, we can jump right into it. And sometimes it feels a little swampy doing this kind of thing, but sometimes that's necessary. And what we have here, just to get us started this evening, is sort of a juxtaposition that gives a real good sense for the fundamental psychosis that is right wingerism. Of course, encompassing the birthers, the deathers, the baggers, the tenthers, you know, the wing nuts. And what I'm talking about is a story that's kind of gotten legs over the last couple of days, mainly because Tom Hartman brought some light to it. And, of course, Tom is a brilliant, brilliant man whom I respect greatly. I always enjoy seeing him at these little conferences in D.C. It was kind of fun sitting right next to him at the Health Action 2010 conference. I had to sort of hold myself back from him. Hey, Tom, what do you think? No, just try not to be an ass. But no, Tom's a smart guy and a good guy. And so he gave an opportunity to GOP Senate candidate Curtis Coleman. He's a pig licking from Arkansas. Arkansas. He's a GOP Senate candidate from Arkansas. He's running against Senator Blanche Lincoln. And the other day, in a moment of absolute right-wing idiocy, Curtis Coleman made a statement about that evil socialist Barack Obama and how he don't love the little fetuses. Because, you know, when Curtis Coleman goes to church, they always stand up and say, Jesus loves the little blastocysts, all the blastocysts in the world. Yeah. But he was standing up at a campaign hoosis. It gave an interview. And he said the following. Sitting down, it's kind of tough to deal with this stuff this early in the program, but, you know, just strap in. The crazy is loose. Deal with the crazy. On March 9th, 2009, President Barack Obama issued an executive order removing barriers to responsible research involving human stem cells. Embryonic stem cell research is taking the concept of taking a life and using it to conduct experiments so that we can temporarily extend somebody else's life. Let me tell you what I just described. I just described what the Nazis did to the Jews in the death camps of World War II. You got that? Embryonic stem cell research has taken the concept of taking a life and using it to conduct experiments so we can temporarily extend somebody else's life. Let me tell you what I just described. I just described what the Nazis did to the Jews in the death camps of World War II. That's right. All those evil scientists all around the country, they've got little itsy-bitsy blastocyst death camps with little itsy-bitsy ovens and little itsy-bitsy showers and little itsy-bitsy barrackses and little itsy-bitsy signs that say blastocyst Arbeit macht frei. It's just like what the Nazis did to the Jews. Right. Sure it is. Now, this is all... Okay. This guy is a loony. You know. Whoops! Get him! Don't mind me! Get a net! Crazy! But I have a question for you. Now, if this guy was elected to the United States Senate, this guy would vociferously oppose, for instance, the Employee Free Choice Act. Okay? He would.
We can't have no card check amendment, because see, that there would allow to take away the sacred secret ballot from working peoples.
Which is total BS, but that's their talking point.
Destroy the secret ballot. I don't want the secret ballot destroyed. You want the secret ballot destroyed? I don't want it.
So if this guy entered the United States Senate, he could be a counted on, I mean, lead pipe cinch, no vote on the Employee Free Choice Act. Yeah. If this guy entered the United States Senate, he could be counted on to be a rock-solid, rock-ribbed, lead pipe cinch, no vote on universal single-payer health care. Or on a public option. Or you get my meaning. I mean, he's a Republican, right? He's a re-pig licking. And there's no doubt but what he would vote against both of those things. He would vote against anything that anybody anywhere with his mouth wide open and a dripping drool and scraping his knuckles on the pavement hollered up and said, "Hey, Curtis, don't you vote for that. It's liberal." Right? Right. There's only one problem. Now, this guy is a loony. This guy's dangerous. This guy wants ultimate control of a woman's insides. And he wants ultimate control. He wants ultimate religious control of science. Does the word Galileo ring a bell here? You know, tortured for trying to explain the Copernican theory of the tortured by the church, told never to leave the house. Galileo was only the church only admitting that Galileo was right 500 years after Galileo was dead. Ring a bell? So this guy's. Crazy. But apart from that, what's the difference between him and Blanche Lincoln? Because Blanche Lincoln vociferously, I mean lying in the sand, dropped dead on the spot, opposed the Employee Free Choice Act for all that she was worth because her masters at Walmart told her to. You see, she doesn't so much represent Arkansas as she does the Walmart Corporation. Go do your research. Go see where Blanche Lincoln was on a robust public option. Go see where Blanche Lincoln was or is on the idea of universal single-payer health care. The only difference between Blanche Lincoln and this clown is the fact that this clown actually wears the clown suit in public. Blanche Lincoln, on the other hand, walks around and says, "Oh, look at me, I'm a Democrat." Well, you know, if she's a Democrat, I'm a Whig. Because she's a Dino. In name only. Anything that matters to you or me as a liberal, progressive, whatever you can, as a decent, ethical, morally centered human being, Blanche Lincoln don't want nothing to do with it. So I ask what I think is probably, at this point, a rather obvious question. What's the difference? To me, the difference would be that in the United States Senate, Mr. Coleman would be there just babbling and speaking in tongues and rolling on the floor of the United States Senate. "Somebody hand me a serpent!" Whereas Blanche Lincoln wouldn't do it openly and obviously. Her opposition to anything liberal, anything progressive, would merely be more a matter of quietly slipping the shiv into our backs between our ribs when least we expected it. Now, you tell me, what would you rather have in the United States Senate? Somebody that you can oppose straight up and head on? Or somebody that you're never quite sure when the stiletto's going to come out? But that's all an aside. That's strictly an aside. Because there's a larger point to this. Now, here's a guy who is screaming that the Democrats and that Barack Obama are just like what the Nazis done to the Jews. Because they're killing the babies and doing the medical experimentation on them. Never mind the fact that the victims of the Holocaust, the 6 million Jews and the millions of other gypsies, gay people, people determined to be not useful to the state, never mind the fact that they were actual living human beings with rich living human lives. Never mind. To Curtis Coleman, they're the same thing as a little agglomeration of 6 or 8 cells. Same, same. Well, as I noted, Tom Hartman had Curtis Coleman on his program today. And this is a beautiful thing. Tom Hartman offered wingnut, babbling fundamentalist Curtis Coleman
Curtis?
Curtis, come over here. Look here at this header. I think we done warped our valve cover, Curtis. Damn, I think. Curtis. Only in Arkansas could a guy named Curtis run for the United States Senate. But, okay, there I go being a liberal elite. Anyway, so he shows up on Hartman's program. And this is the exchange, and it's one for the ages.
First, Curtis Coleman is with us. He's the GOP candidate, the Republican candidate for the United States Senate, running against Blanche Lincoln, the Democrat from Arkansas. He, of course, obviously also from Arkansas. His website, Curtis Coleman, spelled just the way you would expect, CURTISCOLEMAN.com. And Curtis Coleman, welcome to the show.
Tom, delighted to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Recently, you said, And I quote, and tell me if I have this quote wrong, but you said embryonic stem cell research is taking the concept of taking a life and using it to conduct experiments so we can temporarily extend somebody else's life. Let me tell you that what I just described what the Nazis did to the Jews in the death camps of World War II. Is that an accurate quote of yours, sir?
That's adequately accurate. It is, Tom.
Okay. I wanted to give you an opportunity to apologize to the Holocaust survivors of Arkansas for that comparison and that remark.
Well, I'm not certain why an apology is needed. Let me begin by saying that
I'm not certain why an apology is needed. Oh dear, it's only going to get funner.
There was never an intention of any offense to anybody in any regard whatsoever. Let me just also say that in that same interview that I talked about how I strongly support stem cell research. But there was, in fact...
Well, are you suggesting that the death camps of the Nazis were designed to help and prolong the lives of who? The Aryans in Germany?
Well, we do know historical fact that there were medical... And I use that term a little bit loosely there, experiments.
Yeah, Dr. Mengele was doing his experiments in Auschwitz, not in the death camps, but in Dachau. I actually lived near there when I lived in Germany, which was a labor camp, not one of the death camps. The extermination camps, like Auschwitz, had one single purpose, and that was killing people.
Well,
for your information, you may not know that. Well, there were a half a dozen or so, I don't know, I don't remember the exact number of these camps, Belsen, Auschwitz, that were specifically for the purpose of murdering people and nothing else. And then,
with all due respect to Tom, and like I said, I have a ton of respect for him, none of this matters to Curtis Coleman. Because what Tom is talking about here, and this is a point that I try to get across, and you know, you guys get it. But it's got to be hammered home again and again and again so that we've got it all the way down to the subatomic level when we go out and we have to deal with the occasional wingnut. What Tom is talking about there are facts. Facts. And the last thing of any importance whatsoever to any wingnut, walking, breathing, knuckle-walking through life with the drool falling out of its mouth, the last thing in the world that means anything at all to any wingnut, Curtis Coleman included, is a fact. Period. And with all due respect to Tom, attempting to educate Curtis Coleman is a lot like attempting to educate a mud fence. You can talk till hell freezes over, but it ain't going to learn because it is incapable of it. So too with a wingnut, because, and again, let me try to make this clear, a wingnut doesn't want to learn. You know, you can lead a horse to water, but yeah. Unless you waterboard the horse, and then they're all in favor of it. That's what I'm... But but the overarching topic here that trying to explain to this guy that what he said was crass and cruel and sick, and you know what? Surely to goodness, in the entire state of Arkansas, there's bound to be one or two Holocaust survivors. And this guy did just take a big steaming dump on them. Somewhere remaining in the state of Arkansas, in the Jewish community there, there is somebody that has one of those little numerical tattoos on their hand. And all the horrors and the nightmares that go with it. Of a nation and a world gone absolutely mad. And Curtis Coleman says that what happened to them is the same thing as researching the nature of how stem cells work inside the human body. Same. Let's get a little bit more of this insanity. Not from Tom, but from Curtis.
And then, you know, you had Mengele down at Dachau, which was more of a labor camp, and he was doing and a medical experimentation facility, and he murdered many people and did horrific things in the name of science. Yes, but that was not a death camp.
Well, I gladly stand corrected on that, and thank you for that correction, and I'll be much more careful in that reference in the future.
Because it don't matter
but I
shit
do know,
to me.
And there is historical documentation that the Nazis did conduct medical experiments on human beings in those labor camps.
Well, then let's take it to the second step. How, you know, if a woman wants to become pregnant and can't, and she goes in and has a number of her eggs removed with a needle from one of her ovaries, and they get fertilized in a petri dish, and one of the several fertilized ones, one of the healthy, one of the best looking ones, gets put into her, and she becomes pregnant and has a baby, and we're left over with a bunch of fertilized ovums, and typically these get just simply flushed down the drain.
Tom, Latin moment, ova.
How can you compare using those cells that otherwise would be flushed down the drain to cure diseases? And I would
now see Tom's off in the weeds again. Got to get out of the weeds. Tom's off in the weeds again because, as far as Curtis Coleman's concerned, those are babies. Remember how the Bush administration gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to a Tennessee-based organization to do nothing but PR for snowflake babies? Those aren't frozen ovums. Those are snowflake babies. Facts, knowledge, piffle. Those are snowflake babies. Well, but this guy, you know, this guy goes on. And eventually, Curtis Coleman says that a blastocyst is merely life at a different stage, but it's still human life. That's the point. It is still a human being. It is still a human life. It hasn't fully developed. And at that blastocyst stage, it's going to look a hell of a lot more like a tadpole and a frog and a fish for a little while, and it's going to look like a human, but it's just not fully developed. It hasn't, you know, when it's in that fish stage and in that tadpole stage, it ain't learned how to praise Jesus at the same time that people are starving to death on the planet. It ain't a fully developed human being. See? But again, this is not the whole story. This is not the whole story. The whole story, or the thing that brings it full circle, is this, and it comes from, the great state of Tennessee. Remember now, Curtis Coleman is bemoaning what the Nazis did. And, you know, you can take that extension outward. And never mind the fact that Curtis Coleman is, I would get, say, with 99.9% fundamental certainty, some sort of fundamentalist, the phony baloney Christian, has family values, don't you know? You know, anytime you hear somebody talking like that about stem cell research, you know you're dealing with a fundy. And as such, please remember that Curtis Coleman believes in a sort of pre or post or some sort of millennialism in which one of these days Jesus is going to tell him to hold that sword at that Jew's throat and say, "Confess Christ, Jew!" And he's looking forward to it awful good because when the Jew says no, he's going to run him through. He's going to gig him. Because Jesus done told him to. I'm not kidding. That's their book, not mine. They believe that crap. And every head shall bow and every soul shall kneel. I don't know how, I didn't know souls had knees, but, you know, what the hell. So he's all, you know, he's all worried about Hitler and what the Nazis did to the Jews. However, it's not that far a trip across the river and on over into Tennessee to get to the other side of this. And it has to do with an outfit called the Christian Action Network and PRB Films that produced a documentary called Homegrown Jihad, da-da-da, The Terrorist Camps Around U.S. And it's sort of like a Clinton Chronicles, only with Muslims. And in the film, they expose 35 Islamic terrorist training compounds that are devoted to radical Pakistani cleric Sheikh Mubarak Gilani. You doubt me? Well, let's see if we can't. Let's see if we can't round up the trailer for it so you can enjoy the audio at least. Yeah, this is the. This is some homegrown jihad. This homegrown crazy. Homegrown jihad camps around the U.S. The Muslims of America.
On behalf of the Muslims of America, I present before you a documentary film in helping and training oppressed Muslims.
He's going to throw the grenades.
They also blame Gilani for the beheading of journalist Daniel Pearl, who was reportedly on his way to interview Gilani when he was abducted. That was back in 2002.
And we are establishing training camps.
Operating within the United States in plain sight is an abomination, and is definitely a failure of the United States government to act in its own interest.
And they're here in America, and they're hard at work at bringing about the triumph of Islamic fascism.
They got an armed guard at the gate. Just go up there and park on the road and walk down that gate and see how you're treated. Leave him with the car so he has somebody to call for help.
Leave. Period. You don't think Leave. Says. Leave. Period. Don't say another word. Understand?
Okay.
Get out.
Why are we being...
Get out. Like get out.
No one else
get out.
Turns their phone.
Get out.
Yeah, these are a bunch of cracker-ass bastards going up trying to harangue an Islamic compound in Red House, Virginia. You know what? It don't get much whiter than what I am, but one of those rat bastards shows up at my house. I'm not going to be all nice like that gentleman was. and just tell them to leave, you know, all unarmed and whatnot. I'm coming with the side-by-side double-barreled shotgun and telling the sons of bitches to leave. I don't like wing nuts either. Get out. Just leave. So this is, of course, this is a film, and I'm hard-pressed to call it a film. It's just lunacy that purports to describe, as I said, 35 Islamic terrorist training compounds. Now, the thing, just like the... Remember the Clinton Chronicles? Purported to show the 157 people that Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton have personally had murdered. You know, Jerry Falwell was behind it, but it was so damn loony, even Jerry Falwell had to disassociate himself from it. Little Timmy was in second grade when he said he wasn't sure that he approved of President Bill Clinton. He died the next day. You know, that kind of lunacy. He was number 136 in the Clinton Chronicles. Well, this is that, like I said, only with Muslims. And it's been completely debunked. And it was debunked by CBS News. You know, come on, CBS News? I mean, when an outfit like that is willing to debunk this kind of trash, you know it's debunked. Because they'd rather not have, you know, CBS News would rather not have to criticize a right-wing group because they Cutesy Couric, managing editor of CBS News, sits there and pees herself at the mere thought of being called a member of the liberal media. You know, timid does not begin to describe CBS News or any of the other for-profit media. But a year passes, and lo and behold, Channel 5, a CBS affiliate in Las Vegas, what, sweet, is it because, is it sweeps? Are we in sweeps? Because they conducted a Channel 5, a News Team 5 exclusive, investigating the Muslim community in rural Tennessee known as Islamville. Or if you're from around there, Islamville. Maybe. Because Islamville is featured in that same stupid movie. Yeah, there it was. Inside Islamville is a local Muslim community tied to terrorism? Exclusive. Well, you can probably see where this is going. Now, bear in mind that CBS News said no current intelligence exists to suggest any threat connected with this group, which officials describe as wannabes and not terrorists. Okay. So they go down to Islamville. But dig the pitch for it. Get out your Fox News style manual and listen to this. Some believe it is a secret Islamic terrorist training camp. Channel 5 people wrote this. Others have said that's simply not true. In a News Channel 5 exclusive special report, Nick Beres went looking for the truth. Well, God help Nick Beres, because if he went looking for the truth, then that means he had an agenda. Be careful. You know, two words. Believe and truth. Believe, we know how dangerous it is, but whenever somebody starts talking about the truth, you know that you're in the weeds again, too. Because facts. Nick Beres went looking for the facts means a hell of a lot different thing than Nick Beres went looking for the truth. Because if you're for-profit media and you're broadcasting in Nashville, Tennessee, you got a pretty good idea what the truth is going to smell like, right? Me too. So he goes down, Nick Beres does.
Hard-hitting investigative journalist Nick Beres went down to Islamville, and they let him in. You're supposed to stand there and scream at him at the gate, damn it. This isn't going to make very good Sweeps news, Sweeps television. Not looking very exclusive right now. Yeah, I'll come on in. Salam alaikum. Just little quiet community. Sort of self-contained little neighborhood. But, you know, Nick Beres, because he was searching for truth, went out of the way to make sure that he's... The community is sits in a clearing of trees and is very remote. Remote. It's very remote. It sits in a clearing of trees. We talked to Stewart County Sheriff John Vinson. Sheriff Vinson, do these Islamists pose a threat?
Well, really, I can't see that there's been any terrorist activity going on in Islamville.
Cut!
So here's the rest of the script from Channel 5.
Frankly, there was not much to see. There are single and double-wide trailers. Oh, my God, they've been converted! Not the trailers, the Muslims!
Well, a few houses and a tent for the 40 or so people who live there.
We saw children out playing. Driving, we saw a couple more youngsters walking home, and two women running. Women running!
What were they running from? Well, okay, let them do it themselves.
Tonight, part two of our exclusive investigation into Islamville, a place some call a terrorist training camp.
A controversial video makes that claim about a private Muslim community just outside the small town of Dover. But is that claim true? In a new Channel 5 exclusive, Nick Beres is one of the first reporters ever to set foot inside the camp. Now, see what he found and decide for yourself.
The war to seek out and destroy terrorists is never ending.
Here we've taken the fight to Al-Qaeda and its allies wherever they plot and train.
That means overseas and, disturbingly enough, also here on American soil.
Gathering intelligence, stitching it together, and making arrests from Denver to Texas, from Illinois to New York.
You know, excuse me and everything, but does this have anything to do with Islamville? No, this is just scary terrorizing.
Only the thing is, the terrorists in this question are Channel 5. Because they're deliberately trying to instill terror in their all-too-credulous viewing public. I'm informed by our Nash Vegas correspondent, David in Tennessee, that, yeah, it's Sweeps. And Channel 5's been stinking up the book lately. Not pulling in the really big Nielsen family numbers. And David says, so they're determined to out-terror Channel 17, the Fox outlet. You just knew, didn't you? You just knew. So let's see. We've got scary footage of that brown president talking about terrorism. Where can this possibly lead?
Disrupting plots and saving American lives.
Maybe the domestic terrorist Nashville. Threat is real, and some believe it's nurtured in remote areas of this country.
Did you catch that sentence? Let's do that again, friends and neighbors.
Disrupting plots and saving American lives.
The domestic terrorist threat is real, and some believe it's nurtured in remote areas of this country.
Yes, the domestic terrorist threat is real. But Nick Beres, buddy, you're looking down the wrong rabbit hole, pal. The domestic terror threat in this country is real. And there are, and you know what? The home of domestic terror in the United States can be found on any given Sunday morning in any given Southern Baptist church, Pentecostal church, Apostolic Holiness church, independent whatever. Because that is where a steady stream of race hate and a steady stream of political polemics pour out on any given day.
Sundays and Wednesdays especially. That is where, that is from whence came, and, you know, we covered this rather extensively during the election. That is whence came the entirely false statement that Barack Obama is a Muslim, and we have it on good authority, like our best authority in the world, our Bible. We have it on good authority that when, if he wins that presidency, he's going to take the oath of office on a Koran. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, his mama was an atheist, and his daddy was a Muslim. And he's a secret Muslim, too. You know, he got him one of them rugs. And he, and when you can't see him, he's a throwing it on the floor and a bowing down toward Mecca and hollering Allah Akbar and all. And he's going to turn this here into a Muslim country and enslave all the white peoples. There is a real threat of domestic terrorism in this country. And it is held in remote locations, places like, you know, northern Michigan, places like Idaho, places like Kansas and Texas and Alabama. You know, you've got some of the domestic terrorists walking in for a double frappuccino with soy foam latte at the local Starbucks in California now. There's your radical domestic terrorist. But anyway, I'm sure that couldn't be what Seeker of Truth, Channel 5's Nick Barris is talking about. Oh, no, because the video's got a picture of a guy with a pizza crust on his head.
Including Middle Tennessee.
The United States State Department reports FUCRA members have purchased isolated compounds in rural America.
This is a clip from Homegrown Jihad, a nationally distributed video produced by PRB Films and the Christian Action Network. It alleges that some 35 Muslims of America communities nationwide train domestic terrorists. The video singles out, among others, Islamville.
I love the fact that there's footage when they trains terrorists. You know what they've got for footage of that? A guy flipping another guy over his shoulder, which looks to me like it could just as easily be described as what to do when the Christian, when the right-wing Christian fundamentalist zealot attacks you. Yeah. Please, continue, Nick Barris.
Near the small town of Dover, Tennessee.
You know, people sometimes exaggerate facts. Sometimes people see things or think they see things that don't really exist.
Stewart County Sheriff John Vinson says the village is no secret. It's been there since the early 1980s.
But their customs are obviously different than most people in Stewart County.
Well, I hadn't even seen this, and I had his voice pretty well down pat, didn't I?
But still, that they have a right to that.
What they don't have a right to do, according to Vinson, is to operate a terrorist training camp. But he didn't say they were!
Complete with video of a man wrapping a garrote around another man's neck and strangling him. We're not done with this.
Says in the 13 years he's been on the job, he's seen no evidence of that.
FBI have called and asked questions and others. I've told them the same thing I'm telling you. I haven't seen anything illegal go on at this location.
But Vijay Kumar believes otherwise. He's a Nashville member.
Vijay Kumar believes otherwise. Note the absence of the word knows otherwise. Can I just take a moment to say, to point out how damnably subtle this all is? Now, we're taking our time with this. This is a set, you know, this is a 5-minute piece or 4-minute package. And we're stopping and we're talking about it. If you're sitting in your house, you know, Emery and Eileen, somewhere in suburban Nash Vegas, and you're watching Channel 5, and you're one of very few people apparently doing that, according to David in Tennessee, you don't have the luxury, because being Emery and Eileen, you probably ain't quite figured out the TiVo yet. You're still working on the VCR and getting that damn clock quit blinking. You don't have time to stop and say, now, wait a minute, he said believes. And how come he's got them pictures of people who ain't at Islamville doing mean, terrible things to each other? How come he's got that at the same time he's talking about Islamville when there ain't no evidence of that going on at Islamville, Marlene? Marlene, why are you calling me Marlene?
Who's Marlene? I've been married to you for 40 years. I'm Eileen. See what can happen to you? But anyway, let's go back to this guy who believes.
But Vijay Kumar believes otherwise. He's a Nashville member of Act for America, a national group concerned with Islamic radicalism in the U.S. Kumar says it's hard to know.
Come on, Nick Barris, tell us if Vijay Kumar, tell us what his religion is. I'm guessing Vijay Kumar is not ex-Muslim, and I'm also guessing that Vijay Kumar is not a Hindu, or a Jain, or a Sikh.
For certain what happens at the community near Dover.
You got that? Vijay Kumar does not know for certain what happens at the community.
But Vijay Kumar believes otherwise. He's a Nashville member of Act for America, a national group concerned with Islamic radicalism in the U.S. Kumar says it's hard to know for certain what happens at the community near Dover because they keep to themselves.
They keep to themselves. You know, he was a very quiet man, kept to himself, never caused any trouble. And there he is, and he's done shot down 30 people. He was a quiet man, kept to himself. Let's hear from Vijay Kumar.
I'm feeling they're extremely introvert. They want to live among themselves. They think the whole world is hostile.
We took a look at the compound from high above in Sky 5. Now, as you can see, it's...
Oh, that's going to make them feel better. Helicopters over the compound? Yeah, way to put him at ease, investigative reporter Nick Barris.
Built in a clearing of trees with dirt roads, it's very remote with relatively few neighbors. Back on the ground, we were told...
Geographic note to Nick Barris, who apparently doesn't get out of downtown Nash Vegas much. A whole lot of people who live in that neck of the woods, and my neck of the woods, are very remote without a lot of neighbors. It has nothing, it's not because you're unneighborly. It's because it's undeveloped. It's because it's the country. It's because you don't want to live in the middle of an asphalt damn jungle. But to Nick Barris, Channel 5 Action News team investigative reporter, it's suspicious.
Cameras are rarely, if ever, allowed onto the private property. Still, we decided to give it a try, showing up unannounced.
That's the entrance, the Muslim.
And with the sheriff in tow. Now, here you are. You're a little Muslim compound in northwest Tennessee. And you're not bothering anybody. And this idiot with a camera shows up, and he brings the sheriff with him. Yeah, that's unannounced, but it also carries a certain level of intimidation. Definite minus 15 points to Sheriff Vincent for participating in this little smear.
Of the Americas.
We were met at the entrance by two men who agreed to allow us onto the property, asking only that we not show any faces or conduct any interviews.
Yeah, because showing faces, it's going to get him killed. Or maybe it has something to do with Islamic religious strictures against the representations and portrayals of the human form.
One of the men even joined us in the car to give us a tour, and frankly, there was not much to see.
It's kind of like going into any trailer park out in the country.
There are single and double-wide trailers, along with a few houses and a tent for the 40 or so people who live there.
Great moment in journalism. And a tent for the 40 or so people who live there. You know, they're Muslims. They gotta live in tents, right? One problem. It's one of those little domey kinds of affairs that you pick up for $49.95. Sleep six if you're sardines. And a tent for the 40 or so people who live there. Blah, 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 blah.
It was a cold afternoon, but from the helicopter we saw children out playing.
Y'all having a good day?
Yeah, they saw them from the helicopter zooming in. And there's the sheriff. You know, this son of a bitch should be impeached for this.
Hey.
Drive it.
Y'all having a good day? I'm the sheriff.
And we saw a couple more youngsters walking home, and two women running. Others, we learned, were off working jobs.
I'd run, too!
In Dover and even Nashville. There is a mosque in...
The Muslims work even in Nashville. They live and work among us. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid, just because we didn't see the caches of arms and grenades and pictures of Jesus being with his flesh being eaten by half-crazed mullahs doesn't mean they're not there.
In the middle of the village, and they allowed us inside for a look around. It's a...
You know why? Do you know why, investigative journalist Nick Barris, do you know why they let you in? Because one of the very first elemental teachings in the Quran is hospitality to the stranger. You cracker dumbass. Who let this addle-pated booby out of J school? No, see, wait a minute. That's part of the problem. This guy probably went to J school and spent 4 years in a college somewhere studying journalism. Missed out on that whole comparative religions of the world class, where he might have learned that hospitality is one of the primary tenets of Islam. Missed that one. Missed rural life in the South class, too, which might have told him that population dispersal is a fact of life in rural America, that the houses ain't too close together. Missed out on that government ethics class where you don't get the sheriff, the high sheriff, which he is sometimes called in communities at least. Hey, oh yeah, I'm going to vote for Joe. He's been the high sheriff for 15 years. Yeah, that journalism, no, I would think that they would have offered that in journalism ethics, but no. I guess he had a hangover that morning. Maybe he'd been out doing some investigating reporting of the bottom side of the tap down to Wings Olay, where there's 25-cent drafts on Thursday. Missed out on that, too. They invited us into their mosque.
A place of prayer, five times a day. And Sheriff Vincent believes that is the focus of what they do. Pray, not train terrorists.
It's true, we did not go inside every building, but we did see every corner of the compound from the ground and the air, and we saw no evidence of a terrorist training facility, any anti-American slogans or flag desecration. And Sheriff Vincent says there are...
Well, damn! You wasn't looking very hard. No, you didn't find no flag desecration, Team News Channel 5 investigative reporter Nick Barris. You didn't find no flag desecration, but you know what you didn't find, Nick Barris? By God, I watched your report, and you didn't find no American flags, neither. They ain't flying no flag. They's terrorists, and you can't tell me otherwise.
No reports from neighbors complaining of unexplained gunshots or explosions.
That's because it's the rural South. There is no such thing in the country, in the rural South, as an unexplained gunshot or explosion. 4th of July around here sounds like a damn war. And it ain't firecrackers. Hey, Ma, I'm going to go out and shoot off the 9mm for a little while. Well, you just be careful and don't hit the chicken coop. Shoot up in the air, why don't you? All right, Ma. You don't want to be around here on the first day of deer season. You know, I once lived in a part of even more rural West Virginia where if I wanted, during deer season, we had to buy a blaze orange vest for our yellow Labrador retriever so that she could walk out the front door and go potty in the yard without getting blown away by some overeager hunter who thought that she was a short albino doe. I ain't joking. Finish up, Nick Barris.
Nick Barris, News Channel 5 HD.
Well, that was timely, wasn't it? Now, that's not the end of the story. The story airs, and a week goes by. And since it's a little hard for a knuckle dragger to get all the, you know, or some Christian zealot, wait a minute, I repeat myself, to get all the way out to, you know, Islamville. Instead, the Christians attacked the Al-Farouq Islamic Center of Nashville and spray-painted vile, hate-filled graffiti all over it. Muslims go home, and then spray-painted a cross with four crosses in each 90, you know, in each little 90-degree subset quadrant. That congregation is made up mostly of Somalis who had hoped to get away from that kind of conduct by leaving Somalia. Outside the youth training building, a few blocks away from the Al-Farouq Islamic Center, they also found a handwritten note taped to the building. The note read, "The enemy is Islam." They said the note, quote, was filled with statements tying Muslims to Satan and the downfall of Western nations. Salad Nur is the spokesman for the mosque, and he said, "It is unexpected. The only thing I can think of is the sensationalized reporting by Channel 5 over Sunday and Monday. That's the only thing I can think of. Even after 9/11, we have never had any vandalism." And by the way, Channel 5, the story's gotten maybe a 15-second reader mention. No two-part series and investigative team Channel 5 Action News reporter Nick Beres nowhere to be found. Now, just to bring this full circle so that this will make some semblance of sense, I said that this is all a function of the essential psychosis of the wingnut mindset. Because on the one hand, you got Curtis Coleman out there talking about this is that stem cell research is just like what the Nazis did to the Jews. On the other hand, you've got people that Curtis Coleman and any other wingnut would gladly sit down and break bread with doing to a Muslim mosque exactly what the Nazis really did do to the Jews. Kristallnacht, anyone? My heart just breaks. My heart just breaks. Well, we got us First Amendment, but it only applies to Christians. There is an organization out there called Wall Builders that says exactly that. Sick yet? Maybe we can find something funner for the rest of the program. For now, we'll take a little break and come back to your calls. You know the number. Hey, fill it up. No chatty chat until Sunday night in John Fox. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the last liberal radio network in America. This is the Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I hate how this stuff shakes out sometimes. I'm sure, well, a lot of people in the, I'm being notified by several different people in the chat room that, So while Channel 5 is detailing a non-story about non-terrorists who happen to be, Muslim, news breaking out of North Alabama this evening, my old home stomping area, heartbreaking news. At least 3 people are dead, and MSNBC reporting as many as 10 dead in a shooting at the University of Alabama, Huntsville. What did Investigative Action Channel 5 team reporter Nick Beres say? There are domestic terrorist groups in the United States. Well, one of them is the National Rifle Association. But we're not allowed to monitor them. And they're, if Barack Obama's going to get your guns, you better buy 9 million rounds of ammunition before he bans ammunition altogether. He's a liberal. At least 3, as many as 10 dead on the campus of the University of Alabama, Huntsville. Terrifying in the implication, and it is implication only, is the fact that the shooting took place in the science building. And in fact, the shooting took place at a meeting of the University of Alabama's biology department. University of Alabama Huntsville Biology Department. Trent Willis, chief of staff for Huntsville Mayor Tommy Battle, says there are several other shooting injuries in addition to the 4 that he knows of, and he doesn't have an exact number. The biology faculty meeting was underway when the shooting started. The biology department. The biology department! You know, where all that evolutionary anti-Christian science goes on, where they believe that we're related to the monkeys. Yeah, that biology department. We will wait to see. We will wait to see what else comes out. But the simple fact that it happened in the biology department has its own chilling aspect to it. Let's go to the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Dave in California.
Hey, what's up, Dave?
Well, our most interesting program, as always, and I certainly don't want to reboot it in any other different direction. I did hear right at the beginning you mentioned that somebody was now in the chat room that had been having some difficulty getting on, and I thought, I wonder if that could be me. If it is, I'm not there.
No, you're not there. It isn't you.
Okay.
No, your Java is still not updated.
Okay. Well, I'm still looking to try to do it. I just thought, well, I wonder if it's possible because I have been known to have some of these tech goons go on and take it. Anyway, a most excellent show as always, Bob.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you. And you know what? Your work is bearing fruit. We got a request today. To send some more information about the horn there to your Unitarian Universalist Fellowship.
Oh, great, great, great. Do you have anything you can send them?
Well, I'll just write a letter back. It didn't come with an email address or anything, so we'll have to use snail mail for it.
If it's the one that I'm a member of.
It's the one you're a member of.
Well, and it came to you in an email?
No, it came to me in a postcard.
Oh, I see.
So, you know, thank you for your work. Thank you for your work.
Yeah, well, I'm more than happy. I really think that there's very few better causes that we could get behind than what you're trying to do. You're widening up what America is listening to you. I guess of the world, anybody that can get on there will be a whole lot smarter for having the experience. Thank you for being there, Bob.
Well, thank you, Dave. And thank you for mentioning it to your fellow congregants out there at the UU Fellowship. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, we're huuf.org, and at least some of you people have been sending messages to us saying we're a worthwhile cause. Dave's doing a good thing. Please get behind it. So I'm happy that I'm able to have some impact with that. I hope some good comes of it.
I do, too.
And I hope that other fellowships, other progressive groups should also see wising up America is the first big step that's so essential right now. You know, just letting us go around dummies thinking, well, Rush said it. It must be true. You know, that ain't going to fly. Yeah.
Exactly. And see... Well, the only thing I worry about is, we know how we play, and the only thing that disturbs me is that somebody might tune in and go, "What in the world? What?" But it's all I can do is trust that folks who tune in wanting to hear at least a liberal progressive point of view on things will get the gag somewhere along the way.
Well, I know you do your best to try to do that, and I think it's essential that it happen because so much of what we can tune our radio to right now will only serve to misinform us.
That's about the size of it. Dave, have yourself a good weekend, and we will talk soon.
Thank you, sir.
All right, bye now. Dave, calling from Northern California, doing outreach with his Unitarian Fellowship to try to build audience for, you know, what we're doing here and build support. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Brian from the Granite State of New Hampshire.
Hey, Granite Brian. What's up, man?
Okay. First of all, the latest news stories, the so-called self-appointed climate Scientologists like Sean Hannity and everybody else.
Oh, that. Pardon me. I just have to interrupt. Climate Scientologists. I'm so stealing that.
That's true. Is that what I said?
Climate Scientologist.
That's a scientist.
That's, you know what? That's I'm stealing it.
You got it. You got it. But they're talking about, you know, the rare snowflakes are falling from Louisiana to Mississippi to Florida. And according to this Associated Press writer, Miss Melissa Nelson, Pensacola, Florida, it took back-to-back blizzards to paralyze the nation's capital. But in the deep south, it only takes a couple inches of snow. It goes on. Flakes are falling Friday from Texas to the Florida Panhandle and then up the coast of Georgia, South Carolina. Okay, it goes on from there. You got all that from the television pinheads, right? I don't have cable TV, but I can get their excerpts on the internet.
Right, and well, I happen to have a connection to the Gulf Coast because I have a sister who lives in Mobile.
Oh.
And she dropped me a note to tell me that the entire city was absolutely just gobsmacked because there were a few flakes of snow falling today.
Right. Yeah, that you say that was the only good part of this story I read. That some guy in northern Florida, his little his 8-year-old boy, Steve Pace and his 8-year-old son, Caleb Pace, the first time he's seen snow except on TV until now, and he went off and I think he said he wished it had fallen during Christmas time. That kind of, you know, but that's about the only thing that the real human interest I get out of this, because you get so much of this reporting of the superficial news when the fact is, you know, you can make fun of them as much as you want. Not you, but I mean the right-wing media in this country. The World Socialist website, you know, they've covered the honest news on the Flight 253 bombing scandal there, I believe, as of other progressive websites. But their story, the East Coast blizzard lays bare social crisis of United States cities. And it goes on, the Philadelphia's, how they were affected by this storm, I think just after the first snowstorm, Bob. In Philadelphia, the snowstorm has compounded a budget crisis already at the breaking point. A storm in late December had forced Democratic Mayor Mike Nutter to come up with $3.4 million more for employee overtime, salt, and payment to contractors. Before that storm hit, the city had already faced a $31 million budget gap. City Budget Director Steve Agostini said the snow removal this time around would significantly add to his deficit, and that the gap for next year would likely be above $100 million. Contracts for three of the four unions representing Philadelphia city workers that got financial assistance from the state government are also in question, and the level of funds from the federal government has been cut. Paying for the latest round of snow removal will undoubtedly mean cuts somewhere else in the city budget. It goes on from there. But, again, they make so much fun of this new president, Barack Obama, but the fact is he saved millions of these government jobs by the stimulus package money, has saved millions of jobs in the state government, local government, city government, throughout this entire country. And as bad as things are right now in this economy, and I agree how horribly bad they are, they were allowed to fester for 8 years of unregulated King G.W. Bush rule. But as bad as they are, they could be a lot worse. Barack Obama.
Yes, they could be.
The jobs, Bob.
Absolutely, Brian. And the thing, I guess, given the nature of the problem we are very, very much still mired in, first of all, there are none so blind as those who will not see. So, in fact, if everybody was receiving a check for $50,000 in the mail, the wingnuts who received it would say, well, see, that's communist money.
Okay, I got a story on that communist money in Greenwich, Connecticut, that rich area, the rich burg outside of New York City where all the Wall Street thieves many of them are located. It used to be Prescott Bush's, that's the grandpappy, the Nazi collaborating grandpappy of George W. Bush,
right.
His hometown and the Bush family's hometown. I got a story on that too. Call the caterer, bank bonuses of relief in Greenwich, Connecticut. February 7th, the McClatchy newspaper story. It's also at commondreams.org. From February 9th, or I guess it's Sunday, February 7th, this past Sunday, by Shashank Bengali, the story. There's a great story. But just on this story, continuing on that, the jobs have been saved by the stimulus package, but also, you know, a lot of things get done by government that, especially when it's Democrats, we're not so showy fishes. We don't have to, for a war, you know, LBJ, even when it was in this biggest combat, we're starting to break out of Vietnam, he sadly said something like, he was a veteran of World War II. He didn't really serve in any combat theater and all that, too. But he was not like an actor in phony battles like Ronald Reagan at the Culver City Film Studios. But LBJ still had basic compassion as a Democratic president. I don't like what he did, especially with the Warren Commission, that cover-up, of course, of that horrible day in our history. But to go on from there, anyway, you know, he lamented the first big battle in 1965 in Vietnam where young men from America and young men from Vietnam are getting ready to kill each other, to kill men that they don't even know well enough to hate. you know, that you know, human beings kill a lot for personal reasons and things, commit acts of violence, punch somebody out, and, you know, and they just do that for personal reasons that dislike, nothing to do with, it could be nothing to do with politics or any of that nonsense, but it could be, you know, but in war, we legitimize, and especially since the September 11th attack this country has, we legitimize young men killing other young men they don't even know in other countries where these people, they might be very good friends with them, get along very well with them in a peaceful way, and that's how you really defeat Al-Qaeda anyways, is with that peace department that Dennis Kucinich just talked about. But anyways, the positive things that LBJ was very effective, and especially in the very first year of his second term, 65, 66 there. But the Congressional Quarterly has a rating there, Bob, of the efficiency of the first year of the Obama presidency. It's at 96.7% efficiency for his bills that were passed and his legislation that got through. And that's the highest by any first year of any president in American history, except for LBJ's first year where he was 0.4% higher. He was at 97.1%, 65 through 66. That's when he passed the Civil Rights Act, et cetera. And, you know, his great skill as a politician. But apparently, as quiet as he is, Barack Obama, you know, as a gentlemanly, too gentlemanly for some of us, the Harvard Law School type of demeanor, or where he's still gotten a lot of effective legislation done, especially the stimulus, which has saved so many jobs and so much of the infrastructure of this country that the rightists, the libertarians, these corporatists don't give a damn about. That they don't give a damn. But there's Republicans that... The news media has got to let that come about. And one thing that's helped with that, too, P.M. Carpenter in the BuzzFlash.com, he's written about that Obama's, ever since that Baltimore meeting there about a week or 10 days ago or whatever it was in very late January, was it, with the Republican leadership with Boehner the rest of it? Yeah, those lunatic liars there. Ever since then, it's according to P.M. Carpenter, he says the signs of the shift in public opinion and the people's general immediate perception about Barack Obama, the signs of the shift abounded. Prior to Obama's instantly notorious meeting with House Republicans, but clearly that moment was the unmistakable tipping point. Almost universal applause for the president's performance encouraged more plain-spoken confrontation on his part, and sure enough, by the next week, Obama was doing just that. And they went into New Hampshire that later the following week about the health care issue. Then he said, at a New Hampshire audience, I believe that was in Nashua, I said to the Republicans, show me what you've got on health care, he told the New Hampshire audience. You've been sitting on the sidelines criticizing what we're proposing. You got a better idea? Bring it on. End quote.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it, you know, you could do a good Barack Obama impersonation, but not precisely the Obama of yesteryear, according to Mr. Carpenter, but then again, rather profoundly so, in that he most admires not only what works, he mostly admires only what works. And that's what they're talking about, this effective legislation that's not as dramatic as getting the use of force resolution in October 2002 against Iraq. You know, they're building up and everything. The smoking gun will be a mushroom cloud, Condi Rice, a Condoleezza, you know, what's that Chevron oil tanker named after her, the ultimate profiteeress, and George W. Bush himself, and all the lies, and Cheney, the rest of the litany of lies, the Nazis would be ashamed almost of the litany of lies that they had building up to that October, that March 2003 invasion of that helpless, war-exhausted country of Iraq. But a lot of effective things apparently have been done by Barack Obama. They're not the way that the television age and the post-television electronic age, that may not be as dramatic as people may not like it, but they are getting done. And the fact is, another, like Paul Krugman, I hope he's actually checked in with Barack Obama, has really consulted with him, but he's talking about this Ryan, but Paul Ryan was one of the Republicans that Barack spoke to at that meeting in Baltimore, right? The congressperson there, he was a freshman congressman from Illinois.
Is he
he's saying that Paul Ryan and the Republicans, their latest proposal for Medicare and for the overall health care reform, and it just includes, Mr. Ryan offers a plan for Social Security privatization that is basically identical to the Bush proposals of 5 years ago, 2005, early 2005, when King George Jr. had his mandate, apparently, when that stolen election. The fact, you know, again, they've stolen trillions already from the Republicans, namely, especially Bush Jr., from the Social Security's annual surpluses, the American worker, that's the most effective insurance system in the history of man. And they've stolen those surpluses when the duly elected Al Gore was going to have the lockbox and he was going to protect him. And they have nothing but surpluses projected for at least the next 10 years, three straight years of surpluses before Jr. stole the election in December 12, 2000. We have to always remember, Bob, how much, what a disastrous 8 years those 8 years were. Even Ronald Reagan, I think, as much as he could be considered more liberal by these teabaggers, by these fascists, by today's, you know, by the.
Right, but by the same token, Brian, what you have in Ronald Reagan is, it's
superficial, I
know. No. It's not superficial at all. It is the avalanche at the top of the mountain. You know, an avalanche at the top of a mountain can begin with a snowflake.
Yeah.
And it's relatively small at the top of the mountain. It's when you get to the middle of the mountain that it's hell on wheels. And so, you know, what you're describing in those eight miserable, tormented years of George W. Bush is merely Ronald Reagan's avalanche of evil. In the full rolling malicious thunder of its force.
Yes, and he was heavily influenced by the libertarians like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand and the rest of this woman Ayn Rand, the so-called philosophical thinker, is that just greed is good as her only thought. It's so sickening to read her. The social Darwinism.
Oh, it's the sex scenes in Atlas Shrugged that just made me scream, Brian. Yuck.
She had a huge floral bouquet made in a dollar sign at her funeral in 1982 by her personal request. You know, that's just so. These are the kind of people. Ronald Reagan was heavily influenced by them, yes, but he didn't dare do some of the things. Maybe because they had that George, he didn't dare do some of the things that George W. Bush did just so brazenly and shamelessly. Maybe it's because of September 11th, he felt he had to get away with any kind of profiteering, et cetera, in every area, not just the war profiteering. But, you know, the Medicare bill is, Obama's trying to fix that where it was totally unregulated. And they make fun of the Democrats, but talking about using criminal threats against their own people and against the Democrats, too, to force that Medicare, so-called Medicare drug coverage bill through that just gave Big Pharma nothing but corporate welfare in the trillions it will be over the decades. To force that through, and they try to make the Democrats and the bullies in the Senate and the Congress, they're not.
Well, look, Brian, let me give you a great example.
Okay.
Because this one just slayed me earlier.
All right.
Harry Reid, okay, whom we all recognize as being a, you know, not the most forceful man on earth.
But he did get that jobs bill is pretty much it's got through today, right?
Right. But this is more of a leadership issue. What I'm about to get at. Well, I mean, haven't gotten there yet. The Washington Post reporting today that two senators, good senators, okay, Tom Udall, Democrat from New Mexico, and Tom Harkin, Democrat from Iowa, whom I personally, you know, you don't get any better liberal than what Tom Harkin is.
Good man.
Okay. Good men both. They have both advanced mechanisms or means by which this business of a determined minority of 41 can hold the business of the country hostage. Okay, it's disgusting and it's shocking to the conscience.
It's traitorous.
It is because they're not doing it because of any particular philosophy. They're doing it because I want him to fail. Remember that? This is that.
If they can keep the public perception that Obama's everything he's trying to do is stalled, which is not the case according to the Congressional Quarterly and according to the people that actually see how government works and observe
and in this particular story
every day.
In this particular story, Brian, your senator
keeps the lays in place these Republican traitors, yeah.
In this particular story, Brian, your senator Gene Shaheen plays a part as well.
Okay. What's a good part?
Okay. Well, they have put forward ideas would weaken the tactic of delaying and blocking floor votes.
Okay.
They put forward a tactic that would basically gut the filibuster.
Yep.
And Harry Reid's response to it was to say that, well, I'm not in favor of it.
Harry. This Tom Hartman was just talking earlier today, just saying they needed to get the filibuster. They just need to. It's such an anti-democratic bill in effect that they need to. Firstly, I look at the history of the filibuster at Congress.org. They have a picture of Strom Thurmond doing it back in I believe it was it 47 or 48 or maybe a little later than that, filibustering, of course, against some civil rights bill. It might have been even during the Eisenhower time for about 24 hours, but in those days, you had to actually do that. You had to do like the Jimmy Stewart character in Mr. Smith Goes.
Right, that all went by the boards, Brian, with the quorum call and all that kind of stuff.
Harry Reid doesn't even make him do that, but Tom Hartman was saying they could get rid of that quorum call and make it down to 55 or even 51.
Well, and see, that's the point here. Listen to Tom Udall's approach.
Okay.
Tom Udall has proposed that at the start of the next Congress in January, Vice President Biden would declare that the Senate is not a continuing body within the rules, and that would therefore set aside the rules. Because Vice President Biden is, of course, the president of the Senate,
right?
And he would be acting in that regard, declare that the Senate is not a continuing body, and they could then approve new rules on nothing more than a 51-49 vote and get rid of the filibuster.
That's right. And how?
Do you know what Reid's answer to that?
Oh no, what is it?
Reid's answer was, well, no. A rule change would take 67 votes.
My God, I would even.
I'm at the point, Brian.
Voting for a Republican senatorial candidate out in Nevada this coming election year.
Precisely my point. I am at the point where it would not. I will not shed tear. Number one, Brian.
No.
If Harry Reid loses his seat.
And it's disgusting. This thing with these so-called free market types. Talk about a total bailout by government. The call the caterer bank bonuses of relief in Greenwich, Connecticut. It just the total the taxpayers bailout is that's the only thing that's brought up the TARP funds and the $14 trillion pumped in by Geithner and Paulson before him and now Bernanke. That's what's built up these there's a caterer cell phones are ringing once again. This is in Greenwich, Connecticut. That's one of the richest areas in the country. The average household earns $126,549, almost 2.5 times the national median based on a 2008 census estimate. But caterer cell phones are ringing again. Luxury car dealers are sending the Porsches out for test drives. An architect is booking multi-million dollar jobs for his Masters of the Universe, quote-unquote, clients, titans of Wall Street, who made this leafy Connecticut suburb of New York one of the wealthiest towns in the country. When the financial industry tumbled, however, Greenwich's fortunes fell with it. Now, as the federal bailout has helped lift investment banks to surprisingly robust profits, I put huge quotation marks around that word profit.
robust.
The major financial firms will dole out billions of dollars in salaries and bonuses this year. Came as welcome relief here, even though the rest of the country is still grappling with 10% unemployment. End quote. It just goes on from there. It's sickening. That's what we still, even though he's more effective than the national corporate media is making him out to be, we've still got to steer Barack Obama back to helping Main Street. I hope when this jobs bill will do that, but it's just a part of it. There was just some way to get him to fire Emmanuel, Rahm, and Geithner and Summer.
But at that point, Brian, you're asking for a wholesale purge of the administration, and that is highly unlikely. This has to be taken in baby steps. Harry Reid's only hope is that the Republicans, so many of them running in the primary.
I'll take Harry Reid being.
No, wait, Brian.
Okay.
Wait. Okay. You know, you're going to have all that I never hurry you or anything, but we got to have a conversation here.
I'm sorry.
Harry Reid is banking on the fact that there are a bunch of Republicans running against each other, and that when one of them wins the Republican primary, that they will then splinter, and he will be able to take advantage of that splintering, and a bunch of them will stay home, and he'll get reelected. That's what he's banking on. But the fact of the matter is, he's had an opportunity to leave or to lead, and with that opportunity to lead, he has failed to exercise it. So, like I said, no tears for me if he loses, because frankly, I can't see that he's done anything with the 59 that he had. All right. Now, secondly, inside the administration, pick one. You want Geithner gone? Do you want Rahm gone? Pick one that you want gone, because you're not going to get a purge. And for my money, the answer to that is Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel, gotta go.
But isn't he so close to him from the Chicago politician days there, you know, the state and local politics of Chicago, that Rahm Emanuel is just too close, too much of a homeboy, or whatever the term is, to Barack, for him to do that? Even though the guy's a Republican, he talks about liberal angst, and he calls liberals retards, and that this insulting, you know, never mind Sarah Palin, she didn't care about her Down syndrome son. She's from campaign every day for, she didn't care about, gave no quality time to that poor kid. She's not a mother to that poor child, as far as I'm concerned. But I don't even want to get into that. The fact itself, I don't need Republicans to instruct me on that Rahm Emanuel is not a loyal Democrat. He's not true to anything like progressive values. He's a corporatist like Geithner and the others. But I think it's more of a chance that Geithner or people that are less close, Summer and Bernanke, though they did finally push Bernanke through, that they would get, he could get rid of them. And in that same line, I think you covered it partly last night, Bob, but why doesn't Barack just go right into the recess appointments for these 70 federal appointments he wants that Shelby was trying to hold up, and other appointments? You know, George Bush was not at all shy about pushing that crazy war lover John Bolton into the United Nations, for God's sake.
Right, and frankly, it's the one moment that I would like for him to act like George Bush, that he probably won't, Brian, that he probably won't. I got a roll here, but good talking to you, and have a great weekend.
You too. Good night, sir.
Later, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Brian, calling from New Hampshire, and onward we go. Or not. Okay, well, I thought we had to... Oh, well, if you want to jump in, lines are open. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333. And just an update on what's going on in Huntsville, Alabama. It turns out that there is a man and a woman are in custody at this point. The woman was a Harvard-educated biology professor. And it's being reported now that she started shooting after she was denied tenure. Now, it's still Alabama. No, it's not some Army of the Lord Southern Baptist running in and blowing away the bio department. It is not. But I would also add that the politics of, and this isn't just a Southern thing, the politics of education are such that getting tenure in any university department, whether it's biology or art or anything else, is just brutal, you know, with all the publish or perish business and all of that. And you don't know what's going on inside the biology department of the University of Alabama, Huntsville. You don't know, for all I know, there's some sort of intelligent design guy there running the department that doesn't want, you know, somebody who, they're talking a lot about that, their evolution. I don't know. I don't know. But I do know this, that even if it is simply a murder committed in the heat of passion, it is once again another portion of the enduring butcher's bill, which we have to deal with, being paid by ordinary folks. It's heartrending. What would she, if she couldn't get her hands on a handgun, what would she have done? Assuming that the allegations are true, what would she have done? Would she have taken a ball bat? Would she have taken a dagger? A golf club, a hammer, what? You know, remember, there's also budgetary hell going on inside the universities of the United States, so that tenure means more money, more cost for running a department, when it would probably be cheaper to let somebody who is approaching tenure go and get somebody fresh off their PhD program, or working on their PhD, one doesn't know. but she could get her hands on a gun, and anywhere between three and ten people are dead. And out in the in the halls of the National Republican Rifle Association, there on the marges of Interstate 66, on the eastbound lane side, in their building that has the National Museum of Firearms. The PR boys are working late tonight. Well, how are we going to work on this one? Well, it's just the price you pay for freedom. And that'll be the press release, if they issue a press release. Usually they're just silent on this unless someone asks. But you know what? The blood's on their hands. The blood's on our hands. The blood's on my hands for not speaking up loudly enough about the horror of handguns in this country. Because with very limited exceptions, the only thing a handgun is good for is killing another human being, period. Once knew a guy who was looking forward to a trip out west. He was going to go mountain lion hunting with a .357 Magnum with a scope on it. See if you can get that in your pocket next time you're headed to Starbucks, would you? There you go. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tobias.
Hey, Tobias, what's up?
Nothing. Nothing, though. The chicken came out okay.
Oh, yay. Tobias is having roast chicken for dinner tonight. I found that out earlier.
Prelude into food porn.
Hot diggity.
Roast chicken with stuffed with celery, carrots, parsnips, sage, thyme.
Oh, parsnips, a great and underappreciated winter vegetable. Yum-y.
Well, we don't have as an appreciation for the root veggies as we as our Scots, Irish, and English cousins do. But we should, being here in the Appalachian regions, we should.
Indeed. Indeed we should.
And
you ever do beer can chicken, Tobias?
Yes.
I love beer can chicken.
Easy to do and quite tasty.
Moist all the way through, and the skin just gets wonderful.
I'm the primary fire tender. Yeah, I'm the one that does all the cooking in our house because the joke around here is my wife can't boil water without burning it.
I assume that you're making that statement with your wife out of earshot.
She's not even in the house tonight.
Okay, see, yeah, but, brave man you are.
Well, I would say that with her present because we have a delegation of responsibility. I can't do laundry. You don't want me to do laundry unless you want. I did laundry once, put too much soap in it, and she went out in the rain, and her jeans frothed up. You know.
Yeah.
Unless you want foamy clothes, you don't want me to do that.
Right.
But I can cook.
Or your white socks turning pink or stuff like that. Right.
Right. So it's a delegation of duties. You know, I don't believe in, well, that's woman. My wife works with a young lady. My wife's in the medical profession. And she's a nurse's assistant. And she works with a young woman from Thailand. And I cook and pack my wife's lunch. And she's like, oh, your husband must really love you, makes you these wonderful lunches. And we were first, but she said, you make these really nice lunches, they're all like little meals. And she goes, oh, I can't cook. I don't do these. My husband does this. And the woman goes, but that's woman's work. You know, in Thailand, that would be a dishonor for him to do that. And my wife had been sharing these lunches with her. She'd been eating this food, devouring it. And I asked her, I said, ask the woman if being a chef is a disgraceful profession in Thailand. And I sent with her a list of three top chefs, world-renowned chefs that were Thai.
Not so much.
No more criticism came.
Yeah. Neep. Silence.
And I'm like, think outside the box.
Sadly.
I enjoy it. My wife views cooking as a chore. She hates it. So it's about, and of course we live in the rural part of Kentucky, which of course all Kentucky is rural, but you know what I mean.
I do. And in fact, that dubious and potentially dangerous Islamic compound is not too awfully far from the Kentucky line.
Yeah, there was a mosque, and I stress the word was being the operative part of the sentence, a mosque in Fayette County, just outside of the Lexington city limits. Because my wife drove past every day going, she works in Lexington. Well, of course, you know, like 2 years ago, it got burned to the ground along with her Islamic school, right, you know, in a big fervent heat, you know, same kind of deal. They were always having paint bombs, people, you know, throwing paint balloons and stuff, you know, just always vandalism, always something, and they never bothered anybody. And we don't want them around here. They're not the right kind of people. Yeah. God.
Yeah, I know.
Ignorance sometimes, you know, I can take it at knee level, but when it gets to neck deep, I just can't take it. And that's why I wrote in the chat room, it's like, look, you know, sometimes I get really tired, sick and tired, of people putting on the frock of Christianity and going out and treating it as if it's a full contact sport with other religions.
But that's largely what it's been for the last 2,000 years, isn't it, Tobias?
But I've even said to other Christians, I said, well, yeah, I practice full contact Christianity with other Christians. Because I've had them go, dude, you're really hard on Christians. You're really hard on ministers. I said, yes, somebody needs to be. You know, they've never been held to account for a long time. They've been allowed to just be the bull in the china shop with the world being the china shop. You know, it's the old line from, Animal House, fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Yep.
And that's Christianity. Well, we got a rapture coming up here, so I got to get busy, you know, eating and screwing and drinking because, you know, Jesus is going to come up. And, man, we got to straighten up. And it's like, are you kidding me? You know, you're supposed to pray in private, do your donations in private. You're not supposed to, I mean, do good works. Be of good works. Be of good cheer. Help all those people, even if they're not. Don't proselytize. It isn't Samaritan's purse. But we're going to give away care packages with Bible verses on them. Are you kidding me? No. How about you help all those that need help without any thought that you'll get anything back out of it?
Yeah, there's a loopy notion.
That they will ever come to your way of thinking. They may think that you're a complete moron. You know, they believe in the magic carpenter. They're crazy. Okay, fine. I've had more people tell me, dude, I don't believe what you believe. My belief, to quote Morpheus, doesn't require that you do. That's why it's a belief.
There you go.
And I'm fine with that. I am fine with that. And I will fight to the death to defend someone else's right to believe in their magic carpenter or their mystical, magical lettuce head or whatever. Fill in the blank. Because there's too much of, we have to draw divisive lines and you get on your side and I'll get on my side and then we'll get busy killing each other. Well, like you said, 2,000 years of that, how well has that worked out for you? That's not worked out well for any of us. Because this isn't a zero-sum game. It isn't like, well, there's a big well of religion, and if you take a dipper out of your side, well, you took it out of my side. What?
I know.
You know. I mean, of course you know. And I have so many Christians. And the only ones that I have run into is, man, people don't look at things the way you look at it. I said, yeah, I know. And they're the ones that are wrong because they haven't read their Bible. They want to cherry pick.
Yeah, they're cafeteria Christians, and what their cafeteria in are the most toxic parts.
Oh, absolutely, and that's what sows the seeds of future. You know, it's the scorched earth policy. You know, we've salted the ground to make sure nothing will grow, and like you said, you know, we're waiting for the rapture, and then we're going to gladly put the boot on the throat of anyone who doesn't believe what we believe, and we'll cut anyone's head off. Is it? And you're like, you realize you are a version of the Taliban. You just. Fill in, it's Mad Libs in the Taliban, you know, it's just fill in the blanks. Because I was at Kroger today waiting for a prescription to be filled, and I had the same conversation with the girl that was checking out. There was a whole gaggle of Britneys. And the girl was, there's three girls at the little checkout there working there, all in their little Kroger frocks. And I noticed they all had Britney name tags on. I said, wait a minute. She goes, yeah, there's five of us. And they were quite proud of the fact that there was a whole bunch of them. She goes, it's kind of weird. You know, I said, yeah, names work that way if you know about generationally. And it's like all the mothers got together and decided to name their kids in your generation Britney. I said,
and Tiffany. Don't forget Tiffany.
I said, well, right. I said, go back in my generation, it's Crystal, and you go back before that, it was Lisa, and then you go back before that, Elizabeth.
Oh, there was a bunch of Elisas in my generation.
Yep. And I said, that's homogeneous. I said, that's the collective mind at work. They all didn't have a big meeting and said, okay, we're going to get our wives pregnant. Everybody, what's the name this year? I said, guys, we all get the same thing. They skip to the first part of the New Testament. You know, it's Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and then the old standbys, David, and a few others, and that's it. Those are always the top five or six.
Well, you know, we used family names.
Right.
Because
family names will always, you know, be peppered in there.
Yeah, we used three of them on our youngest because we knew that she was going to be what the shoemaker hit his wife with, namely the last. So we got three family names out of her. And we got three family, well, including Kincaid. Two other family names for Margie, and then we just hung my name on poor Ferg. But yeah, I like that generational stuff. I never had an urge to. Well, you know, I argued I didn't want to name my son after me. I wanted to name him Salathiel. Because I've got a multi-great-grandfather named Salathiel, and I just think that name's cool. And I got a great-grandfather named Ozias, and I wanted to name him Ozias. Everybody kept overruling me. So now he's just stuck with my name.
Well, I got screwed both ends. I got Tobias, and people said, well, that's a really stupid name. You know, yeah, try being seven with that name. I said, well, why don't you go by your middle name? Yeah, because Horatio is so much better.
Oh. But those are names with real character.
Well, they are now. But like I said, I'm 40 now. I don't mind it.
So when you were seven in second grade, were you Toby?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I figured. Yeah. You got to be an awfully serious second grader to make Tobias stick.
But it's like, you know, because you don't want to be. You ruin really quick. You're going to go by some derivation of Tobias, because you do not want to go by some derivation of Horatio, because kids are cruel.
Yeah, I don't know that there are any.
I mean, they're gonna just pretzel that into something, you know, that you're just gonna pray for death.
That's the truth. Well, more info coming out of this story out of Alabama. It just gets sadder and sadder. The details are now. This woman was not given tenure, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why she allegedly did what she did. Her name was Annie Bishop. She was a Harvard trained neuroscientist, Tobias, and she was denied tenure even after she get this. While at the University of Alabama, Huntsville, she was credited with inventing a computerized cell incubator that let scientists have a sealed, self-contained mobile system with which they can replace Petri dishes. This woman doesn't get tenure? Not justifying her, breaking bad and going out and shooting up the department, but who gets tenure if that woman doesn't?
Yeah, what's the bar? How high is the bar? If that's.
But you want the really sick part? A little bit ago, I said, you know, the boys at the NRA
mm-hmm.
are working overtime.
Yeah.
Well, on the one hand, I heard from David in Tennessee, not too awfully far from you, who said. The PR release from the NRA would be, if guns had been mandated for all department meetings, someone could have stopped her.
Yep.
Signed, Leo X. Slidebolt, NRA PR Department. Well, that's funny, right? I mean,
I'm quite sure they're all that if that hasn't already been put out, something to that effect will be put out within the next 24 hours.
You gotta wonder. You know, this is coming from MSN. This story I'm looking at is coming from NBC, MSNBC, and News Services.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a pastiche or a collage, I suppose. Well, apparently, Gina Hammond went running to NBC affiliate WAFF in order to capitalize on this. To tell them that she had lobbied the University of Alabama trustees to allow students with gun permits to carry their weapons on campus. They turned her down. Here's the pull quote. Why, Tobias, why is this in a news story from a so-called responsible news organization? Why does this have anything whatsoever to do with the who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much of this story? Journalism is not complicated. Any reasonably intelligent liberal arts type can do journalism. Why is this pull quote included, Gina Hammond, why is this pull quote included in the story? I'm scared to go back to school. However, if they were to allow me to carry my permanent pistol on campus, I would not be as scared. I'm sorry that nobody in that room had a permanent pistol to at least have one person, save one person's life. What the hell is a permanent pistol? Never mind. But why is that in the story?
Because there's an agenda at work, and it's not the myth, which is, you know, the liberal media is as much a myth as a unicorn or a dragon or a fairy or a leprechaun. You know, I've been looking for the Keebler Elves tree because apparently that's the same place that the liberal media hangs out at.
Broadcasting, this is the liberal media, broadcasting live from the Keebler Elf Tree.
Because the only real media, the only mainstream media in this country.
We go now to Papa Smurf for commentary.
Is right wing. It is conservative by nature. Is it max centrist left, maybe, in the few places like MSNBC, on a few shows like Maddow and Oberman. And that's as best as you can say, it's center left. People say, oh, he's a crazy liberal. No, he's not. You know, the most liberal person on mainstream media on television is Rachel Maddow. And so he's up on the upper table tier, because not everyone, as yourself, if he's included in that, gets MSNBC. It's not basic cable.
Oh, no, not by any stretch of the imagination.
And she is the most liberal person, proud of it, on, and that's 1 hour a day. Well, excuse me, 2 hours a day, because it's replayed. But that's, you know, 1 hour of original programming out of 24. Now, if you want to counterbalance that with the garbage that is, I think it's a four-hour block now of Morning Joe, and everyone just fawns over Mika Brzezinski, which I would, oh, my God, the Stedford wife Mika Brzezinski, you know, and Joe Scarborough in the morning, which is just wing nuttery at its finest. You know, God, I wish I could magically confer on you my MSNBC for a week just so you could experience that nuthatch.
No, because see, I can't stand to start drinking that early in the day, Tobias.
Yeah, you'd have to with that. I mean,
oh, I'd have a straw in the tequila bottle. There's no doubt about it. I'd be way past the 80 proof stuff and up into the bottled in bond. I can't. It's like I used to sit down and. Back when my dad was still on the planet with us, he'd scan past, and this is back when we had MSNBC, and he'd stop for a few minutes on the Imus. And we'd both just sort of stare goggle-eyed at it, and I'd look at Dad, and Dad would look at me, and he'd say, you done radio and stuff, boy? Yeah. Is that radio talent? I'd say, not by any metric of which I am aware, my father. Okay, good, because I thought I was losing it, because he sucks. You know, and when an octogenarian tells you somebody sucks,
right.
Sucks.
But then that's the thing that gets me. It's like when people, you know, these are the same blathering idiots that will say, well, Barack Obama, he's a socialist, you know, he's a liberal. Well, he's neither of those things. He's a centrist DLC Democrat.
you know.
And what amazes me is that nobody ever talks about, it's just gone. They rode, poor, God rest his soul, Ted Kennedy, they rode him like a borrowed mule over Mary Beth Kopechne. Was that her name?
Mary Jo.
Mary Jo Kopechne. Nobody says a damn word about Lori Klausutis. Now, Lori Klausutis was beautiful and young, and she was an intern or some sort of an aide to Joe Scarborough.
Yep, and he killed her bigger than shit.
Yes, he did. But they had to bring in a defrocked coroner from Missouri who didn't even have a license to do forensic coroner work in Florida to say that she died of an apparent unknown heart malady that strikes out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
And then she, in falling, she hit her head on the coffee table and canceled Christmas.
Because he was tarting around with her, and she was going to spill the beans, and because that's when he was wanting to slip around and get back into politics. And
I would just love to be, I would love to be a guest on Morning Joe someday and have him, you know, cut to me. And just a minute, Joe. I feel one coming off. Klausutis! And watch him cut away.
Because that's why, you know, he went off when he was off the show for a while, when he went from, when they dumped him to Scarborough Country and recycled him into Morning Joe, there's like a year there he was off the air, and it was all, well, he had a back problem, had back surgery and all this stuff. Yeah, that was because that's when all that crap was going on.
He had actually quit the House of Representatives before they gave him Morning Joe, or before they gave him Scarborough Country.
But when he was on Scarborough Country in the evening, when he left that gig, before they recycled it into a morning affair, there was a gap of time where he wasn't on the air at all.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
And, you know, and that's when all that, there was the whole big brouhaha about that, that whole thing was going to be dredged back up. Now, I would love to know what was going to happen there, what caused that to go away. Because his cover story was, it was health issues and he had to have surgery on his back, and that may have been true that he actually was having to have a planned back surgery, but that's not what took him out off the air for almost a year. Because you could dig around online and find it that there was somebody was talking about that whole, hey, you know, he was banging his secretary and then she ends up dead when she's going to leave. You know, there's more to that story than anybody will ever know.
But, you know, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Tobias, I got to roll on. Great conversation, brother, and have yourself a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, you as well, and have a good Valentine's.
And hey to the congregation.
As always.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye now. Tobias calling from Kentucky, our resident theologian. We roll onward now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, how are you?
Nah, I'm getting by. It's kind of a weird night. Nothing like having a mass murder happen, you know, on your shift.
Well, the thing about that, I mean, I'm sorry, she didn't get tenured? Oh, my God, you know.
Yeah,
the home, really. I'm, you know, these people, what the hell?
Well, I'm glad you called in, Sandra, because, you know, you sort of operate with, and Lord knows what's been going on in California. It ain't exactly calm in the ivory halls of academe these days.
Well, it's funny because last semester when I, in my department, you know, 4 part-time lecturers, it was like, goodbye, you know, yes, but I'm just confused. It's like, listen, you know, move on. I can't believe she shot up folks.
Well, I don't know how long she had been away from Cambridge.
Is she dead?
No, she's in custody.
Oh, snap. And it's a female. You know, they said female.
Well, you know, there have been two instances that I'm aware of in which a woman busted out the handguns on a campus. One, of course, is here, the University of Alabama, Huntsville. The other one's the University of Louisiana, Lafayette. Or Louisiana Tech. One, you know, somewhere down on the bayou.
Oh.
But I don't know how long she had been in Huntsville as opposed to the time spent in, on Harvard Yard.
This freak is someone unfortunately, these elites, they don't get what they want. You know what I'm saying? Are they going to discuss that?
Well, I'm guessing the answer is no.
No, but I mean, seriously, those people are the most pampered group in America, those people who get into those elite schools. Because once you're in, it's damn near impossible to get out, right?
Yeah. That's the meal ticket, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it really is. It's sort of the exact opposite of, our state schools. But anyway, I just wonder, maybe it was an entitlement issue and she lost it.
Well, I don't know, because, University of Alabama Huntsville is a function of the University of Alabama system. So it's, it's entirely a state situation. But maybe she was thinking, I've invented this highfalutin thingamajig that replaces Petri dishes and it's computer controlled and all of that. Yeah, that ought to get me tenure. Sorry.
Well, I mean, no, none of this.
I'm not justifying what she did.
No, but none of this is funny in the slightest, but it's just sort of like, just in March, Alabama had a shooting where 10 people lost it,
Yeah.
10 people died.
Remember the shooting at the guy who'd worked at the chicken plant? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, that's the one. And the thing is, I mean, the reason, we never did, of course, the discussion didn't come down to what it really was about. Some guy who'd been effed over, no matter in different directions, I'm not saying it justifies it, but... that was an economic bent to it.
Oh, it absolutely was. And the journalism aspect of this, how they break down the stories with the little subheads and the little subsections of the stories. Well, in this particular one, there's a subsection that says screams heard, and it says Erin Johnson, a sophomore and a student aide, told the Huntsville Times there was a biology faculty meeting underway when she heard screams coming from the room. Okay, that's one paragraph under screams heard. And then they launch into this business about Gina Hammond, who doesn't feel safe now that she can't take her permanent pistol with her to class no more.
Her what?
Permanent pistol.
What's that?
I have no freaking idea.
Which is another discussion about how everyone needs to walk around armed?
Yeah, if they were to allow me to carry my permanent pistol on campus, I would not be as scared. I'm sorry that nobody in that room had a permanent pistol to save at least one person's life. I don't know. Is a permanent pistol curly or something? I mean, has it got a wave in it? A permanent pistol?
I mean, no, but it's amazing how trained the corporate media is. I mean, they have an index Rolodex. Whoa, this happened, so we got to run this narrative. I swear to God. It's like on Rolodex.
I can't wait. I can't wait for Neil Bortz to take to the air on Monday and call everybody at the University of Alabama Huntsville a bunch of sissies because they weren't all
like
packing
with the Virginia Tech business, right?
Yeah.
Oh God.
And Tobias is noting by a PM. He says maybe she meant permitted pistol. And maybe WAFF just can't understand the accent.
Oh God! Well, that's special in itself, man. That story just happened, didn't it?
Yeah, it's breaking as of the beginning of the, just about the beginning of the show or thereabouts.
Did you hear about they did some major, or they're doing a major offensive in Afghanistan right now?
I heard that was coming. I didn't hear that it had broken.
Yeah, it had broken, and the thing that's killing me is Afghan offensive is a new war model, Bob. A new war model. I mean...
Do what?
That's the front page of the New York Times. I'm like, I can't believe how steeped in this bullshit we are in. It's like, a new war model. And it's just so written as if matter-of-factly and...
I thought you only rolled out the new models in... No, Rumsfeld, you don't roll out the new models in...
Right. No, anyway, I just saw that on the headline.
Oh, my God, there it is. Afghan offensive is new war model. What in God's name do they mean by this, Sandra?
Exactly.
Let's find out.
God knows.
For all the fighting that lies ahead over the next several days, no one doubts that the American and Afghan troops swarming into the Taliban redoubt of Marja... will ultimately clear it of insurgents. And that is when the real test will begin. For much of the past 8 years, American and NATO forces have mounted other large military, yada, 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 mowing the grass, the soldiers and Marine derisively call it. I'm looking here. I'm trying to find. We've got a government in a box ready to roll in, said General Stanley A. McChrystal. What are they? Huh?
They got what?
This time
a
in Mar...
government in a box?
Yeah. This time in Marja, the largest Taliban stronghold, American and Afghan time commanders? Maybe that's a mismatch. Afghan commanders say they will do something they have never done before. This is the new model. Bring in an Afghan government and police force behind them. American and British troops will stay on to support them. Quote, we've got a government in a box ready to roll in, said General Stanley McChrystal.
Well, I wish they had a government in a box ready to roll in Sacramento here.
Oh, God, I thought of you last night. I was Agnes and I were watching some late-night TV, and there was one of those PSAs, we've got them, come to West Virginia, fall off a rock,
right.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I saw one for come to California, and it was, taste the fruits of our labors of love, and it was, all vineyards and stuff, and, no pictures of the barrio or anything like that. And it ends with Maria, close shot on Maria saying, come to California. And then it pulls out to a wider shot of her sitting there with Arnold, and Arnold's wearing some sort of white suit like he's some sort of Georgia planter in the sun. And he turns to the camera and says, trust me, you'll be back.
Oh, shut up. No, oh, God. Because she looks like Skeletor, and then he is wearing a white suit.
Oh yeah, I mean it was straight. If there had been a lobster on the plate, it would have been a Jimmy Buffett parody. It would have been a white sport coat and a pink crustacean.
Oh, dear God, no, Ben. See, I gotta look at YouTube for that. I haven't seen that one.
And I just turned to Agnes and I said, Sandra is gonna flip.
No, that just sounds crazy, especially. Oh, my goodness. No, I guess that's for outside of the state consumption.
Yeah, that's not for you in-staters. That's for the rubes.
Oh, no, that sounds terrible.
No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes,
Just terrible. Oh, wow. Well,
And the funny thing is it was running at the same time as on another channel was running Escape from L.A.
Oh, no. Well, listen, that's for real. They just laid off 1,000 people down there.
Oh, I know. I caught that in passing. It ain't getting better.
No, it's just.
But I mean, what are the people doing in Touristville and at the vineyards and stuff? I mean, I guess they're not really touched by all of this because what? They were already, everybody they were employing was already employed at slave labor wages anyway, weren't they?
Well, yeah, and it's just the next step is just slavery. But, I wouldn't put that past. And also, did you hear about the, if you're not belonging to a health insurance with your employer anyway, Anthem is about to raise their rates 39%.
Yeah, I did, and that's going to be fun.
That's here in the Golden State. Where poppy is the flower. Yeah, so they're just going to, 39%. This is on top of the 56% increase in profits that all the ambassadors made in 2009.
Yeah, and what is that, Sandra, except a big old finger in the eye to everybody in Congress? You mess with us. That's a horse's head in the bed.
No, it's straight up, it's total gangster behavior and protection racket, and we have to be subjected.
I mean, what economic model, economic trend justifies a 39% across-the-board rate increase?
No, especially when you don't have a choice. This is directed towards, people who have small business, self-employed, consultants, all the industries that are growing. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and... Well, see, I think there's a tie-in to this, Sandra, because I remember a story from a month or so back that was talking about some of this stuff, saying that they would do this as a function of clearing unprofitable patients from their roles.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was this company or what. It doesn't really matter because they're all.
Well, I think the summary effect is the same, isn't it?
Yeah, because they're all in collusion. They're all, you know, just breaking every possible market legal realm that we have. I mean, the it's so disgusting. You know, and they would like to be able to. You know, one of the provisions that we need to watch out is this abolishing. The inability of them to sell insurance state to state, you know?
Yeah.
That's a really scary prospect, too.
Well, at least because basically that would gut the function of any sort of to the extent that any state insurance regulator has consumers' interests at heart.
10th Amendment.
Well, yeah, but it would also gut any state insurance commissions because – you know, you have to, let's say State Farm wants to sell in West Virginia. They have to be registered to sell in West Virginia.
And then, and worse, that they would find the worst state in the country with the, you know, least regulations and then, form the policy accordingly nationwide.
Right, with the little fine print that says any lawsuit has to be brought in South Dakota.
Yeah, or whatever.
Like the credit card companies? Yeah, it's the credit card dodge all over again. Yeah,
because
that worked.
Well, this is part of the, you know, this is all mixed up in the bill that they, you know, so it's...
But wait a minute, Sandra, just kind of processing here for a second. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that open a little Pandora's box that maybe the insurance company doesn't want? Because that state, just selling across state line stuff, wouldn't that subject... Or wouldn't that bring the insurance companies in under the purview of the Interstate Commerce Clause and allow the Congress de facto to establish broad regulatory schemes within the line of interstate commerce cases?
Well, I mean, they were able to decide that, you know, segregation couldn't stand using the Commerce Clause, so, you know, it shouldn't be much of a leap to actually use it for commerce, right?
Yeah, well, if you had a real Supreme Court, but instead we've got the K-Rats, you know,
yeah,
Kennedy,
no,
Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia.
No, I do understand what you're saying, and that would be the way that you would like for it to go, but, you know, I'm more inclined to believe that it would go the Delaware way, you know, where you find the state with the least resistance, and then package the product accordingly. And the hell with California, which actually has a few, laws that provide some protection, except when there is none, when they can raise it to 40%. I mean, I'm still reeling from that, because you know how much, that's so much money.
It's almost an incomprehensible amount of money.
Well, it makes it prohibitive. So what they're going to do is, if you're not going to pay that, you just lose the insurance. So that's like more of, like you're saying, get rid of the people. You know, they already have adverse. I mean, it's just so foul.
Well, I remember when they did auto insurance reform here in West Virginia, and a big part of that was getting rid of something that was rather novel, and it was really, really good for people here, and that was the fact that West Virginians once upon a time could sue, it was called third-party claims. In other words, if somebody rear-ends you and the other guy's insurance company starts screwing around and tries to lowball you and all of that stuff, you get a lawyer, and he turns around and says, listen, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to sue you to the insurance company that's not paying the other guy's insurance. I'm going to sue you for bad faith directly. And then they straightened up, flew right, and paid off. Well, that was all gotten rid of. So now, like most of the states, you can't do that. But the other thing that went by the wayside is the insurance companies were tacitly allowed to dump up to 10% of their policyholders who had absolutely no marks against them. Just dump them for the hell of it just to keep the shoestrings even statistically.
Well, my favorite one is that if you do get in an accident, you know, you can only claim as much as, you know, your income times 10 or something really disgusting. You know that provision?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. So if you make $20,000 a year and you get terribly injured, your life is only, or you can only get, you know, whatever, $1 million or so. You see what I'm saying?
Right, it's a cap.
It's based on your injury. It's just based on. It's just incredible that they can get away with that sort of these sort of laws with the insurance.
Well, but that's because of the stranglehold that the insurance companies have on the individual state legislatures, which is the operative argument for federal supremacy being taken over the insurance industry.
Mm. No, I mean, you got to wonder why the Democrats, Obama, didn't just say, okay, well, Medicare for all. I mean, we know why, but call me naive, but somehow I just think that that would have just been so radical. It would have just blown people away because it works, you know? And it would have worked so much better because you have younger people involved. So, you know, it just seems like such a simple solution. I just am, you know, it's just depressing.
I know. It's almost impossible to get your head around.
You know, because it would have been, yeah, I mean, all the momentum in the world he had to do that. Anyway, perhaps it must just be the leverage that the lobbyists have. I don't know what else it could be.
You know, I think that's probably the simplest and most elegantly logical explanation for it.
Yeah, anyway. I suppose that's the, oh, I know what I wanted to tell you. This is a sort of personal, but I'm actually going to get my degree in May.
Oh, congratulations. Wonderful.
Yes, you know, and I'm sitting here thinking about what, because, you know, the degree and then I enter the abyss of the unemployed or what?
or go to work for somebody doing something you don't want to do.
Well, no, you know, listen, I got to milk it for all it's worth, so I'm just sort of looking at some graduate school.
I would be.
Anyway, but that was the only little personal bit. So I'm kind of freaking out because you know I've been plowing through this nonstop for 4.5 years now, you know, and now it's all coming to an end, sort of.
But I mean, I would think that grad school would be sort. I mean, you know, yeah, it's more debt, but I would think grad school would be a logical. Are you looking at it seriously? You got the applications out and all of that stuff.
Well, I sort of, you know, the thing is...
Go take the GRE and that kind of fun?
I still have to take the GRE. I mean, I sort of, you know, there will be a gap because I think I missed all the deadlines. But I'm actually looking at a couple of online programs, which is like at San Jose State, another state school.
Yeah.
It's like a master's in...
So that would mean picking up bag and baggage and going elsewhere? Or you said it's online?
No. No, it's all, this particular program is all online. Anyway, you know, I don't know. I'm sort of, yeah, but I certainly don't want to go from being this fairly productive person to the abyss of joblessness.
Well, you'll forgive me if I just, yeah, somewhere down the road, and this is just me, I can just see a PhD after your name because there's God, Sandra, you could you know, you hang the alphabet after your name and suddenly they take you serious when you start writing the stuff that was serious and right on point in the first place.
Oh God, but no, I mean the PhD, the thing about that is that it's just too many, you know, I'm like in my 40s, I'm not interested, but a master's I can still, you know, if I want to teach adults, you still can.
Yeah.
It just depends on where. But now the PhD, you know, I don't know. I know a couple of people who are on that track, and it's grueling, really.
Oh, it is. It's absolutely brutal.
And, you know, anyway, but so.
But it does kind of keep you out of the abyss for a little while longer.
Well, no, that's the thing. You know, I'm mercenary. No, I am trying to, I'll be honest, I'm trying to keep from not starving up in here.
Well, look, I just passed. I just passed a birthday not too long back, and I'm now officially 47.
Okay, yep.
And you know what the real buzzkill was on that? You know, because on the front end, every day above the dirt's a good one.
Oh yeah. Sure.
But on the other hand, the buzzkill on that was when I realized that I am now officially covered under the Federal Age Discrimination in Employment Act.
Oh, is this?
I am an elderly worker.
Oh, well, I mean. That's that. And then you deal with, when you're a middle-aged woman, you deal with the whole reality of being invisible. So that's nice.
Hey, look, I'm not here.
So the middle age has its challenges, shall we say. But
I know. I sat down. I'm going to tell a tale on myself before you have to go. But I sat down with Agnes the other day, and I said, honey, should I dye my hair?
What? Nice.
Because, it happened a while back, but we were sitting at a restaurant, and I'd ordered and she'd ordered, and I guess I went to the restroom or up to the bar for a refill or something, and this person working for the restaurant turned to me and said, it's just wonderful that you'd bring your daughter out to dinner like this. That was not good for me, Sandra.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was a little,
Well, those sort of things, because we all forget, at least me, I'm just sort of moseying along, and you just sort of, different things happening, it just sort of hits you.
Well, exactly. I guess my hair started turning white in my early 30s. Oddly enough, it happens to my family generally, but it also coincides with my marriage. We won't talk about that. But the punchline or the last nail, as it were, the straw that broke the camel's back, is when I looked at the guy in the restaurant and I said, "That's my wife," and the guy turns and looks at me and he says, "Really? I had no idea she was that old." Not that you were that young.
Listen, wow, that really does extend it. It's like, dude, can you back up already?
Oh, yeah, I know. Being asked for my senior citizen discount card, somebody else has apparently had that experience as well, Lottie in the chat room.
Oh, no, see, that's bad.
I can get away with walking into McDonald's and ordering that 35-cent senior coffee.
Well, so when your hair is gray, you still got some, though, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I got the male pattern baldness going in the back, but unless you're 6'4", you can't see it, or unless I'm sitting down. The hairline's thinning on the front end, but I grow it long and, curl it and do a sort of a weave and a comb over, and it's a horror.
Well, no, but the thing is, it's really bad because, we're just in our 40s. I shudder. 10 years from now, what's going to be going on? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but that's because the 40-year-olds with money are out there doing the Botox and the liposuction and getting this nipped and that tucked, and they look 12.
Well, yes, it's become another class thing now. It's not, I mean? I hear what you're saying.
It absolutely is. Well, Sandra, wonderful talking to you this evening, and have yourself a great weekend, and happy Valentine's Day, and don't be surprised if you don't get more marriage proposals over the air tonight.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Bye.
Bye now. And don't forget to look for that Arnold ad. You'll just love it. That's Sandra calling from California. Onward we go. All right. And let's see here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. What's up?
Oh, not much. Just been enjoying the show. I heard Brian, your caller Brian, earlier mention one of my favorite resources, Common Dreams.
Oh, I love Common Dreams. They're great.
Me too. And, I think there, again, is so many, we talk about the media in such a negative way so often, myself included, and there's a lot about it that's ugly and awful, that's for sure. But something like Common Dreams is really inspiring to see. I noticed that, just recently, like in the past year, they added a section where readers can comment on different articles, and that also gets very interesting at times. And I noticed people sign up to get updates from them, and they're close to 200,000 subscribers. And that's a significant number. So congratulations to them. And it's a struggle for sure each year. They make appeals, and I think they need to raise like $50,000 or so every half a year, I guess. And they get a lot of support, which is good to see. And again, just another plea to your other listeners out there, if they've got any disposable income, I know how much the horn can use it. So.
Well, that's the absolute truth. You know, we're looking, and we've talked about this a lot along the way, Preston. We're constantly looking at ways to expand what we can do. So, you know, here in the next few months, the Good Jobs, Green Jobs conference is coming up in D.C. in May, and I can't imagine a better place for the horn. And then Guy and I will be in D.C. again in June for the Campaign for America's Future. And then in July, the big to-do, Netroots Nation in Vegas. And that's it's all going to take money that, frankly, doesn't exist right now.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm a tourist. I've seen D.C. a few times now. And we go to these things and we work our butts off, and I still haven't been to the Lincoln Memorial or been to the top of the Washington Monument. But anyway.
Yeah. Or how about the Smithsonian?
Oh, yeah. I actually hustled my family through there last March. Okay, there's a dinosaur. That's an elephant. Let's go. Where's the Hope Diamond? Okay, there's the Hope Diamond. Don't touch it. It's bad luck. Come on, let's get out of here. We got to get back to a meeting.
Right.
That was our experience at the Smithsonian. But you know, it's not about tourism or anything. It's about trying to reimagine what media can do. And I don't know if you. Well, I'm sure you've heard him call from time to time, Michael, who calls from Ohio, otherwise known as Kid A in the chat room. He and I have been brainstorming our tiny minds out, trying to figure out some video-related issues so that we can do not – because so much of what you see right now, for instance, if you go find a YouTube video, so much of what you see is a static shot from one camera.
You know, I noticed that.
One of the things we're trying to figure out is how to bring multiple cameras into a thing so that you can get different angles, close-ups, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And to do it without spending $1 million. Because, you know, if you've got $1 million for a video truck, that's all, you know, it's no sweat.
Yeah. I actually know somebody who might be able to help out on something like that. A friend of mine named Jason Bosch, he's a Facebook friend too, but he lives here in Denver. And he does a lot of video work, and he travels, and he does most of his stuff at cost. And I don't know, I might get in touch with him, and who knows, maybe we can work something out. Or he might know people in D.C. I did some video work for a while, and most of my shots were, you know, single angle. But it worked out okay. I wish I could have done it, you know, more intricately, but I didn't have the funds for it. But I ended up still at least getting recorded a lot of, you know, important talks by people like Angela Davis and Howard Zinn and Ralph Nader, and was able to share, you know, videos and utilize cable access TV here in Denver and Boulder and a couple other cities. I think there's a lot. Yeah, I think it's definitely an underutilized medium. A lot of us have video cameras, too, and it doesn't really take a lot of skill at all to, like, go to a college or a union hall or a church and record these progressive lectures and kind of move the tapes around.
Right, and well, you know, my fascination, though, is live. I think, you know, going to YouTube and doing stuff on your own time and at your own leisure is great, and it's critical. Our dear friend Maura shot me a video link today from a debate in England about, and it was a real debate, you know, with the point being, the point and counterpoint was the Roman Catholic Church is a force for good in the world, and the counterpoint was, no, it's not. And Maura sent.
And I think it's yes or no.
Well, Maura sent me the "no, it's not" part, and the guy was just devastating. You know, how lovely to see that civil discussion take place, and so that's great. But I also feel I've got this. There's just this nagging sense in me that when you're watching something happen live, you are there's a more participatory quality about it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and a spontaneity and. I don't know, being just
right.
In that moment like that.
Exactly, in that moment. And so, you know, we're looking at a piece of equipment that may or may not answer some of our questions, and it's, you know, and it's not that expensive. It's $1,000, but it might as well be $1 million from our standpoint.
You know, another appeal to your listeners, you know, I think if we sent, you know, nice notes, encouraging notes to groups like C-SPAN, I mean, C-SPAN has done live feeds of, you know, G. Gordon Liddy show and also progressive shows. They've done Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman was interviewed on their in-depth segment a couple of weekends ago.
Right.
But I think there's a chance, at least if we could at least ask, encourage them to take some of what you're up to. I mean, grassroots radio. I think they might appreciate. I'm sure some people at C-SPAN would be intrigued by that and try to make it happen.
Well, and the other thing I'd love to see happen, Preston, is like I said, I have flogged this piece over at BuzzFlash till there's just about no electrons left on the screen.
But it was good. I've posted it several times myself.
And it was such a magnificent little piece of PR for us, and I hope that it's working. And you know, you started out talking about Common Dreams. I would love, and I've done it. You know, I've written the emails both to Alternet and Common Dreams and said, listen, guys, you know, I'm not asking you for your money. I'm not asking you for access to your email list. But, you know, we'd love to have a little coverage here of what we've got going on, because everybody says there's no internet, there's no liberal radio. You know, we've been doing this for 6 years.
Yeah, we need to network. It's networking. And the obstacles to it are really the floodlight. They are.
And the other part of that, Preston, though, is that it becomes much more viable when it's not me writing, because it looks like me doing a hustle.
Yeah.
When it's 200 people or 1,000 people or 5,000 people writing similar things.
It's a dozen, you know.
Yeah, but we.
You know,
on
the other end, there's like a dozen people who regularly contact David Sirota, a really good progressive host here in Denver, who you know him, I imagine, or you know of his work at least.
Oh, I know very much of his work. We've never met personally. I hope to someday.
Okay.
I was wandering around your Facebook page, in fact, and just, you know, I noted there that you've done a lot in the way of commenting on David's work. And I applaud you for doing that, Preston, because that's what more liberals, more progressive people have to do. We got to get behind these efforts if we want these efforts to ever bear fruit and start swinging that pendulum back towards something more approaching media fairness and media balance in this country.
Yep, and he's getting a lot of heat right now. I mean, he's getting you know, about a dozen or so, I would imagine, regular emailers or people kind of haranguing him from the right wing for sure. An occasional death threat every now and again, but he's also getting a lot of, you know, flack from, you know, Democrats who get angry at him if he says something negative about, you know, Ritter or Mayor Hickenlooper.
Yeah, but Jesus, Hickenlooper came out. What in the world was the mayor of Denver doing with that miserable speech to those fossil fools?
Yeah, and today David Sirota had kind of a defender of Ritter or Hickenlooper's on today, saying something about he was, I don't know, just trying to be diplomatic, I guess. And it's got to be intimidating. I can feel, even though it's disappointing to me and I can get angry in a moment like that at someone like Hickenlooper, I also feel some compassion for him because, you know, being in front of that group with all that power.
Oh, I know.
Emotionally aggressive
it just has political death written all over it. You know, when those guys decide they're against you, you're done.
And how much, you know, and again, if he's not getting a lot of, you know, pushback or encouragement or support from, you know, the environmental groups or whatever, you know, those mining people are going to sound kind of persuasive, I guess. Or who knows? But anyway, he's done a lot of good work here. He's, you know, David Sirota spoke with him, and, you know, they had a good, challenging exchange. The Hickenlooper administration has done something really cool called this program called Green Print Denver. And it's all about windmills and making neighborhoods more walkable and bike-friendly, urban gardens, community gardens. You name it, all kinds of green stuff going on, and a great project. So just as we can criticize them, you know, I think it's so important to
offer credit where credit is due. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tell me, what day part is Sirota on? What time?
But he is on in the mornings from 6 to – or 7 to 10 in the mornings.
Okay, so that would be 9 to noon my time, I guess.
Yeah. And, yeah, your listeners might want to try streaming it from time to time, you know, certainly not to pull.
Well, I mean, I very much want to see him succeed. And you know, it's another. The only thing that worries me is that, and this is not a criticism, I hope you understand. Radio is a different animal.
Yeah.
And if you know, if
commercial radio too.
Oh well, here. But if he can fill up 3 hours and remain both informative and entertaining, then more power to him. Because we need more, not less. And you know, that's one of those things that's so hard to explain to people. When I try to explain to them that, you know, I'm not in the competition business. I want more out there. You know, if somebody came and said, you know, Bob, you turn the microphone off, and we'll guarantee you radio equity in the United States between the liberals and the conservatives. Mic's off. You know, I want that to happen.
Yeah, I sense that in your work, how you're not competing so much. In fact, it was interesting. I learned the root of the word compete, some Latin term, I think. It means to strive together. It's not about one person trying to you know, smash the other to get ahead. It's,
right. It's not. It's not a cannibalistic process at all.
Right. And we're seeing other very fascinating examples of cooperative endeavors that are enriching our lives, like the whole Wikipedia phenomenon. You know, that's collaborative thinking, and just great stuff. That there's a book about this issue called like The Wisdom of the Crowd. I think it is. You know, and elites have been telling us the opposite all along, trying to convince us of how dumb we are and violent we are and incapable we are and all that stuff. But, you know, that comes with being an elite. You know, you think you need to be in charge. They think they're so superior. But the general public, I think, is where we're going to find most of our answers for sure. And it's a lot more progressive, again, than the elite wants us to think. That's another thing they're trying to convince us of. Hannity and Rush, they're always saying, this is a conservative country. This is a conservative country.
Now, didn't you love it this evening when Brian coined the phrase, Sean Hannity, the Christian Scientologist?
Yeah.
That was precious.
I'm listening to the audio version at the library. They just got Max Blumenthal's Republican Gomorrah, and it is a sensational book. I've heard some interviews in the past with Max Blumenthal, and
well, Max has been on this show a couple of times.
That's great. But I'm really putting a lot of attention into the audio CD version of his book and his introduction. It brings out, you know, he just kind of resurfaces some insights from Eric Fromm, a psychoanalyst.
Right.
Wrote several books, including one called Escape from Freedom. You know, and if people want to understand, I mean, beyond the political misinformation and all that stuff, if they want to get to some of the kind of psychic, the roots in our minds of how it is that people can be taken in by these authoritarian movements, this book is really revealing that in powerful ways. So anyway, I just wrote Max on Facebook, just thanking him for his work. I also posted something on Netroots Nation. I noticed they've got a Facebook page, and
ooh, I need to friend up with that.
Yeah, I friended them, and I made a comment about you know, grassroots progressive radio, which you're developing here. And one quick comment also on why it's so befuddling that you don't get the $50,000 or whatever that you can use, because certainly, without a doubt, there are enough people who know about your program, have contacts, you know, all of that, have resources, can get grants, can whatever, can sell some of their stock, that money isn't arriving. It's disappointing that for day after day we can have stations, these 50,000-watt stations across the country, how they can attack labor, how they can attack gays, minorities, Reverend Jesse Jackson, Van Jones, and there just isn't a tsunami of protest. Protest calls to the host, protest calls to the managers. Where are the unions on this? They've been silent.
Preston, I mentioned last night that the unions did a great job on health care in many ways, but on media, It is, and I mean, I've been down this road. I've tried to talk to people, you know, and trying to go beyond the issue of my own self-interest or the horn's own self-interest. And it's crickets. Nothing.
It brings to mind a comment from Martin Luther King Jr. He said something to the effect of, during this time of social injustice and social change, it's not the words of the evil people that we're going to remember, but the silence of the good.
Hear, hear. You know, there's a big to-do coming up. I hope it will be a big to-do, given the size of the city. I think it's March the 1st in Atlanta. The Rainforest Action Network, which does great work, is going to be raising a ruckus down there about mountaintop removal. And you know what I wouldn't give to go down there and just broadcast or interview and bring the interviews back for play later. You know, and that's Atlanta. That would be that'd be a chance to maybe for the first time in my life actually meet Mike and Kathy, invite them to the event, and let them further activate the truth seekers on this issue.
Yeah, and maybe at some point you can have, you know, what stringers are they called? Or just
it's kind of like what Matt Osborne is doing. Yeah, what Matt Osborne's doing so brilliantly in North Alabama. The OsborneInc.com, and he goes up to Nashville and covers the Teabagger convention. And again, I don't know how he managed to do it. I don't know where he came up with the scratch to do it, but he did it, and we were the first people he came to.
Uh-huh.
You know, we can build that network of people who want to be citizen journalists.
Yeah.
And it will be brilliant when we do. Preston, I hate to cut it short, but I got a couple of blinkers here that I want to go ahead and hit.
Great. Well, good catching up with you.
It's wonderful hearing from you.
And we'll be in touch for sure.
All right. Thanks a lot, Preston. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Calling from Denver, that's Preston. And you know, Preston walks the walk and talks the talk. If you friend up with Preston on Facebook, you will see that Preston is constantly working at the idea of networking, putting people together, not just advocating the horn, although he very kindly and generously does that, but trying to connect dots, as it were. It's a great thing that he does. And look, you know, I get real icky feeling about saying, hey, would you please go out and do this? But Preston's right. You know, if I write to Alternet, if I write to Common Dreams, it's going to look like I'm just shilling for something that I'm involved in, namely the horn. But you know what? If 50 people or 30 people or 20 people or 10 people write to Alternet and Common Dreams and people like that and Truth Out and say, hey, look what these people are doing. Look what they've made happen for more than 5 years. Look at this. This is the model going forward. This is the future. If you guys do that, then that's you guys doing the advocacy. It's not me. And it carries about a million times the weight. So it might be something worth your thinking about. And I genuinely believe that. And just a reminder, before I do go back to catch these last couple of blinking lights that I hope are still there, remember, coming up this weekend, namely tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., the premiere of Action Point with Cynthia Black on the horn. Do not miss this. You are going to dig it. Be here for this. We will have the Rick Smith Show starting at about 5:20 p.m., and then after that, 7 p.m.-ish, things don't end necessarily exactly, but 7 p.m.-ish, Action Point. 3 solid hours, and I got a feeling it is going to light you up. You want that. And you know what? Have a little, if you want to, come by the chat room. Hang out for a little bit. I don't know, maybe Cynthia and or her producer Chris will pop by and say howdy. I know Cynthia's in the chat room right now. So be there for that, and give her a very, very warm welcome, because she's the newest addition to this little ongoing effort at real, live, honest-to-God liberal media. And even, you know, it ain't always about the financial support. Sometimes just being there is half the battle. Manifesting interest. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, are are you picking up my call?
I am picking up your call.
Okay, this is Cindy out in the Northwest.
Hey, Cindy, how you doing?
Okay, I sure enjoyed that talk with Preston. I happen to be a really diehard David Sirota fan, and you know that because I'm always sending you his stuff. I remember way back when Dave Sirota was always calling into Al Franken's show over at Air America back in the old days before Franken ran for office. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and that's where I first became aware of David's talent. And I've been picking up podcasts of his show and trying to catch up with it on the weekend because it's been so busy around here, as you know from my emails. I wanted to call you up with a story, but it's not enough time on your show to tell you the story, so I'll call in next week and let you know the story.
Okay.
But as for the week up here, we've got really warm weather, and the rest of the country seems to be snowed in.
Yeah, but, you know, that may change. Was it you that sent me the article about the possibility of snow in all 50 states?
Yes, I sent that to you. Isn't that something?
I don't know if it would be unheralded, but it would be pretty close to it. My sister and my brother-in-law down on the Gulf Coast were absolutely just gobsmacked by the fact that Mobile was getting big, what my sister described as great big old half-dollar-sized big fluffy snowflakes.
I've been all over the net looking at all these different cities with all the snow in it that never expected it. It's really very surprising. Since I wasn't telling my story, I was going to tell you something else. Of course, the mind goes blank. The snow event is really wild. And then we talked about the melting of the Arctic zones, you know, and the fact that we had another week of nothing happening in D.C., but of course, they have the snow to blame it on, didn't they?
Right.
How long do you think before this president will get the idea that he's losing his base?
Well, you know, there's an interesting story out there, Cindy. It's it comes from a day, I think it was yesterday. There was one of those rope lines where you get to shake hands with the president, right? There was at a recent rope line, a woman by the name of Jillian Caldwell, who is the head of an organization called One Sky. They are a climate action group, got to shake hands with the president about his position on and confront him about his position on coal.
Yes.
And as she had him by the hand, she said, it's got, and there's video of this out there, too, by the way. If you go to Obama's Rope Line Debate on Coal by William S. Becker at Huffington Post, you can find this. But she said, it's got to be renewable energy. No more clean coal. It's a unicorn. It doesn't exist. And Obama says, I disagree with you. We are not going to get all our energy from wind and solar in the next 20 years. And she says, let the market do it. Can't the market make the investment? And Obama says, they can't do it. The technology's not there. I've got a nuclear physicist in my Department of Energy who cares more about climate change than anyone, and he'll tell you can't get it done with just that, so you've got to have a transition period to do all this other stuff. Don't be stubborn about it. If I could do it all with wind and solar, I would. We can ramp it up. That's what we're working on. But the fact of the matter was, when she confronted him, Cindy, about clean coal, you know, it doesn't exist, and he says, we're not going to get all our energy from wind and solar in the next 20 years. Well, but the fact, and he says that the technology's not there for wind and solar. Well, the technology is really not there for so-called clean coal. That's by the people who advocate this stuff, by their own admission, it's 50 years out, Cindy.
Hello? Hello?
I know. And so you say, you know, do you think that he'll finally figure out he's losing his base? I don't know. If he still thinks that coal can be made clean, God only knows what's going through his head.
I don't think much. I think he's a good speechifier, but I don't think he's mature enough or well-read enough or has a scientific mind to understand anything like that. And he doesn't know. I don't know where he learned his politics, but he really doesn't know his country. I think he's a little immature. And I put a new footnote on my email, I hope you noticed today, where it's a quote from him, from President Obama, and he's saying, I'm willing to move off the preferences of my party in order to meet them halfway, them being the Republicans. And that was when he was talking about clean coal. He's willing to move off the preferences of his party in order to meet the Republicans halfway. His friendship with the Republicans is more important.
But the thing is, Cindy, they're not meeting him halfway. They're standing their ground, and they're saying, you come 100% to us or go to hell.
And he's doing it. He's crawling to them like they're some sort of woman with the only tail in town.
I'm glad you said that and not me. Hey, Cindy, I hate to say it. This has been far too short a conversation, but I got to roll. We're fresh out of time.
Okay, but I want you to know I've been blogging all over the net for the horn.
Oh, I know you have. I know you have. And I appreciate it.
I do that every day. I hit at least 6 sites and put in a good word for the horn.
I appreciate it. Maybe if we get more people doing what you're doing and decide that we're going to have a concentrated effort to say, get Common Dreams to write about the horn, or get Alternet to write about the horn, or get Truth Out to write about the horn. And we focus the effort in place after. Maybe that's the next step. But I really do appreciate it, Cindy.
I used to copy you with a lot of the stuff I did, but I do too much of it to keep copying you all the time.
Yeah, I know, I don't necessarily agree, but I'm at 80% of my Gmail capacity. I guess it's time I go clear out some old emails.
Yeah, I've been doing that, too. But you know my handle out there, Yellowbird, and I just hit everything I can. So when you listeners on the horn see that Yellowbird flag in the blogs across the net, that's a reminder for y'all to do the same thing.
Yeah, and, people who are members at Democratic Underground, they can do it there. You signed up and you got a you registered and you got a membership at Buzzflash. Start writing about the horn on their blog. Do it.
I do it. I do it there. I do it everywhere. You know that.
Yeah, exactly.
I do it at every site and newspapers across the nation, and I do it in my letters to the different congressmen and senators I write to.
That's a beautiful thing, Cindy. That is a beautiful thing. Thank you so very much, and have a wonderful weekend. And a happy Valentine's Day to you and Steve.
You too. You have a great weekend, Bob.
All right. Bye now.
Bye now.
Well, that's it. What a Front Porch Friday. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in and participating in all your myriad ways. Thank you for your ongoing support of the financial variety to keeping the horn going. It will be the middle of February by the time we next speak. And, again, we're not anywhere near where we should be for the middle of February, and it's just it's only $2,000 that we're talking about raising a month. Only $2,000. You know, not being halfway would be a little easier to understand if we were trying to raise $10,000 or $50,000. $2,000. And yeah, it might as well be $1,000,000 for a lot of us, but nobody has to contribute that amount. We can do it $10, $15, $20, $30, $50 at a time. So for some of you, $100 at a time, and God, it is so appreciated. So, and by the way, Preston, I know you're still listening, so I forgot to say, Frank and Angel says hi from the chat room. If you can, and if this matters, and if you want to see the horn do things like go to conferences and broadcast them so that you don't have to be there, that you can be there virtually through the magic of the internet, then we've simply got to make the infrastructure happen to be able to do that. Thank you all. Thank you for chatting. Thank you for calling. Thank you for emailing. Thank you for everything. Have a wonderful weekend. A very happy Valentine's Day to you, even though it has roots in a rather pagan Roman tradition. I think the pagan Roman tradition was more fun than the Christian one, but yeah, since when is that any different? Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks to John Fox, who will be along with All Foxed Up, I hope, on Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Live conversation radio, returning to the horn on Sunday evening. Don't forget Action Point with Cynthia Black, Saturday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, for its debut run. Rick Smith comes your way about 20 after 5 Eastern Time on Saturday evening as well, and his Sunday show, too. There's a lot here. thanks to Ben Birch. Thanks to Peter Godbold. To Lottie and Sue, our chat room moderators, thank you so very much. To our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, thank you. To our blogger, Texas Betsy, thank you. To our Alabama correspondent, Matt Osborne, thank you. Thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know who are a part of the support process that keeps this network on the air. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. I call them the bravest, hardest working people I know only because they are. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is the 12th day of February, 2010. It is a Friday. It's Abe Lincoln's birthday.
Happy birthday, Abe. And it is a, among other things, it is a frozen Friday on the front porch. Now, if you were to say, for instance, have a frozen Friday on the front porch, and it wasn't the, you know, it wasn't the 12th day of February, maybe say it was, the 20th of July or something like that. A frozen Friday on the front porch wouldn't be such a bad idea, because it would mean that the long necks were deep in the ice and somebody had a blender out and a little of this going on. Yeah.
Nibbling on sponge cake.
Yeah, that would be nice, but not so much. It's a frozen Friday on the front porch in the middle of February, and I do mean frozen, and I do mean February. So, we'll just kind of have to deal with it with the hot toddies, I suppose. Me, I'm having a hot cup of decaf. Stop it. Don't even. But I'm having a hot cup of decaf from Bob Alexander's superbeans.com. I mentioned the other night that I was gonna order some, and I felt like I would be a hypocrite if I didn't. And I did. And you know what? It's so good. It's decaf that tastes like coffee. And you really just can't get around the importance of that when you're a coffee lover who can't have caffeine.